something new. You never know just what that do. Steve and Johnny, Johnny and Steve. Now you know where to go when you need a friend. Well, just tune your radio to WGN. No more blue Chicago night. They're gonna make you feel all right. Steve and Johnny, Johnny and Steve. I would love to be one.
Okay, I think we'll start with a pop quiz.
Okay.
What were you doing 40 years ago tonight? Or what were you doing 30 years ago tonight?
Now you know where to go when you need a friend. Well, just tune that radio to WGN.
That's right.
No more blue Chicago night. They're gonna make everything all right. Steve and Johnny, Johnny and Steve.
That's awesome. This one.
Steve and Johnny, Johnny and Steve.
Okay, because we don't want to leave you wondering. 30 years ago tonight. Julian, what were you doing 30 years ago tonight?
Wah! Wah! We can't hear you.
We can't hear Julian. Why can we not hear Julian?
How about now?
Now we can. So what were you doing 30 years ago tonight?
Well, without getting too descriptive, I believe my mother was in her 16th hour of labor at this time.
Okay.
When were you finally born?
At 10:21 in the evening.
Really? Oh, God bless her.
So we've still got
an hour
and
10 minutes
before your official 30th birthday.
Woohoo! Yes. Well, so, happy birthday.
30 years ago tonight, Julian was being born.
Mm-hmm. And Julian, that was the 96th day of the year. It was the 14th Wednesday of that year. And if your mother has a calendar from the year you were born, 1994, she can hang on to it and use it again in 2033. All the days except for the holidays will be right in 2033.
I don't think we have any calendars from last year.
Yeah, people don't have calendars. We get one from a funeral home every year, and I'm like, yay!
And Vintage Guitar puts out a great guitar calendar.
For $25-$30. I like the free one that comes from the funeral home.
Yeah, well.
And you used to get really good ones at the hardware store.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they used to have great calendars in gas stations.
Yes. Yeah. Well, not for mixed
great
audiences.
Yeah.
And Barry Butler, Chicago's photographer, he puts out a gorgeous calendar every year of Chicago sights. Let me just bore you with a little bit more information about your day.
And for those of you who are maybe joining us for the first time, Julian is our producer, and this is his 30th birthday tonight.
It is. And Julian, have you ever wondered how much of your life you have slept away?
All the time.
All right. Let's assume that you, and this is probably not likely, but if you had slept 8 hours a night since you were born. I know. If you'd slept 8 hours a night since you were born, then you would have slept 3,653 days, or 10 years of your life you would have slept.
Well, then I got about half of that.
So you've slept about 5 years of your life because you were in college and you're in radio. So that explains it, right? But that's a weird thought. If you're 30 and you did sleep 8 hours a night, a third of your life you have slept away. That's not very enticing, as good as sleep is. I don't want to say
that. I don't
know. I don't want to say that. No. The most popular name the year that you were born for boys, it was Michael.
Huh.
But you're a Julian. How did you become a Julian?
Well, everyone seems to think that it's because my parents were Beatles fans and named me after John's son.
Oh.
But it was actually my my dad's sister's idea. She just pulled it out of a hat, and that became my name.
But you got to
So on your birthday, does your family sing Hey Jude to you?
No.
or do they just cut to the na-na-na-na-na-na, happy birthday, na-na-na-na-na-na?
No, they just sing happy birthday really, really fast.
Okay.
And your middle name is interesting.
Right. Okay. So my middle name is spelled Gennaro, mm-hmm. but in our native tongue, Spanish, it's Genaro.
The G is a ha.
A little phlegm in there.
Genaro.
Yeah, there you go. Nailed it. And that's actually my grandfather's name.
Oh. Well, that makes for a great name. You could even use that as your radio name. Julian Gennaro, and then you could be like incognito when you're out amongst people, right?
Well, I did go by Gino for a little bit because that's shorthand for that.
Oh, okay. G-E-N-O. Well, the number one song on the day you were born, are you ready for this? It was R. Kelly's Bump and Grind.
Oh, boy.
I'm sure your mother was all about bump and grind after 16 hours of labor, right?
She never lets me forget it.
I guess. Oh, and how many babies were born on the day you were born? 364,566. That's the equivalent of 253 babies every minute. And you think you're special. There were 252 other ones born.
Thank you.
Try to imagine that. 253 babies every minute.
No.
Yeah, every minute. Did I mention the girl's name? The most popular girl's name the day you were born was Jessica. That's a good one. But Michael is kind of like forever. Yeah. Michael's been popular. And, of course, you are an Aries. And I looked at your horoscope because of the day you were born, and it indicates that you are a creative soul destined for greatness. Feel no pressure, okay?
Not at all. Not on live radio.
Okay. Your zodiac element is fire. Your lucky number is 6. Not just because you were born on April 6th, but that is your lucky number. Trust me on that. And your birthstone is the diamond. You get the best birthstone out of all of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You can't beat that.
Because you are a...
Leo.
I'm a sapphire for... I don't remember what your birthstone is. I can't imagine it being all that exciting because...
And I used to know. What is my birthstone?
Because you do like jewelry, but yes. Bob Fukuda's in studio with us. You remember where you were 30 years ago today? I'm trying to think where I was 30 years. Oh, we were at this radio station.
I was up at Hancock.
You were?
Yeah.
Working the top of the...
No. I was chief engineer of 103.5.
Oh.
I was Mancow's engineer.
Oh. Yeah, that's hard to forget.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right? That's very hard to forget.
Ruby would be Steve's birthstone, by the way.
Oh, really? Huh. Oh, because he's July.
Yeah.
Even though... of course. That's right. Because my dad was also July, but you are July, but you're late July, therefore
right.
You are a Leo.
Right.
Right. When's your birthday, Bob?
May 6th.
Oh, so we
the have... Emerald and Taurus.
I notice how he chimes in case you want to get me
just
anything.
Just in case you're, you know,
emeralds would,
keeping track.
Emeralds would be satisfactory. Well, May 6th. Well, good. We got another reason to celebrate then in a month. Of course, we'll be out of town, but we'll think of you on your
timing
birthday.
Timing is everything.
Yes. Ron Brown, when is your birthday?
It's in July 13th.
Oh.
So I'm also Ruby from a birthstone.
So you're 13 days before Steve. Steve and Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
Share the exact same birthday.
Yep.
Steve, at one time, had the same legs as Mick Jagger. Same skinny rock and roll legs. Not so much anymore. But not that you have fat legs. That's not what I'm saying at all. They're just not skinny like Mick Jagger's. Oh, I better stop while I'm ahead. Oh, golly.
We'll take a break, and then we will explain what was going on 40 years ago.
Hmm.
So that and more coming up at WGN.
But I told you even then, you look so pretty in a hospital bed. I remember you said scared, and so was I.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Billie Eilish?
Yes, sir.
That was Julian's Dealer's Choice.
Yeah.
Great song. I it's familiar to me, and I can't think of the title of it.
The 30th.
Oh.
Duh.
And here, I was worried you were going to play Bump and Grind. It really crossed my mind. We said, it's Dealer's Choice, and I went, oh, no.
And have them replace us with David Hochberg? Goodness.
Well, the other news, the musical news, the year you were born, little dark side of things, the day before you were born, Kurt Cobain killed himself. And as a result, Nirvana was like the biggest thing the year you were born.
Yeah.
Because you know how that happens when somebody dies and the music becomes wildly popular. But then so was Bruce Springsteen that year because he won all the awards for his Philadelphia tune.
So we said we would explain what was going on 40 years ago tonight.
Yes, yes.
We know exactly where we were 40 years ago tonight. We were at Johnny's mom and dad's house after having spent an evening at the Desplaines
Graceland.
No, it's on Graceland Avenue. It was the Desplaines First Congregational Church.
Yes.
We were having a wedding rehearsal.
Yes.
And after that, everybody went back to Johnny's mom and dad's house.
Because Brown's Fried Chicken.
Yes.
The best fried chicken.
Because as of midnight, it is our 40th wedding anniversary.
Egads.
Which reminds me, you should mark down the address for the Steve and Johnny blog, which is stevenjohnny.wordpress.com. That's stevenjohnnie.wordpress.com. Because we're putting together a blog that will have some pictures that have never been seen before.
Yes.
Of some of the things that happened at our wedding.
And some of the people.
At the reception. People like Richard Crowe.
Clark Weber,
yeah,
Dave Baum, Neil Sabin, some of our
Neil who now runs MeTV,
a bunch of our producers from the they're old now. I realized
because seasoned
we're friends on Facebook. I'm like, how did that happen? But 40 years.
But you will see a wonderful picture of. Those of you who have been with us for a while know the name Richard Crowe, Chicago's ghost hunter. Richard was at the wedding reception, and there is a wonderful picture after Johnny threw her garter.
No. You took the garter off.
I took the garter off, and then...
Didn't you throw it?
No, you threw it.
No, I threw the flowers. You threw the garter.
Did I throw the...
Right, Bob?
Supposed to be.
Thank you.
One of us did. See,
we've got a picture.
We remember it so clearly.
Well, it was 40 years
just like
ago.
It was yesterday.
Right.
The point is that there is this wonderful picture of Richard Crowe.
A large man that he was.
And Dr. Ken
Shamoff,
who used to be a regular guest on Wally Phillips' show.
Yes.
They're basically fighting each other to grab the garter.
Because little did we know that back in the day, if you caught the garter at a wedding reception, you could go down on Rush Street and drink for free.
At least that's what Richard Crowe said, because he was sure.
He got it.
He made sure that he got the garter.
And he had a great night because he hit Rush Street after the reception. And he said, you just want. And I remember thinking, that was a much simpler time, because what would stop a guy from buying a $4 garter and just going down a Rush Street and saying, I just caught this?
But also, I just happened to think, and I rarely do, so I thought I would share what I thought. One of the pictures we did not find, we didn't find a picture of Lee Phillip. For those of you who don't know, if you're a longtime Chicago and you remember Lee Phillip, who was a mainstay with Channel 2, along with her husband, she produced many soap operas for CBS. Anyhow, before our wedding, we were contacted by Lee Phillip. She said, can we film your wedding? And we said, what? Why?
You'll get a free videotape.
okay, we get a free videotape.
Professional.
Fine. And we said, okay, you can do that, because they needed footage. They needed wedding footage for Channel 2's news and for a special they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, as long as the cameras and everybody will be kind of out of the way, sure, go ahead.
Because they were big cameras, too, big TV cameras, not just small camcorders.
Come to find out, years later, we have an Emmy-winning wedding because they ran the footage in a special they did on Channel 2 called Children of Divorce.
And we were the opening scene.
We were the opening scene.
And it won an Emmy for Lee Phillip. And it's like, there I am walking down the aisle, and you're at the front of the church waiting for me.
And then, Children of Divorce.
And the print goes across as Children of Divorce. I'm like, whoa. But then we became the
It was stock footage. And your dad wanted to know why we weren't getting royalties.
Because my dad would go to work,
so often.
And somebody would say, I saw you on television last night, John. He goes, you know what? They should be paying me for that. Every time they have a wedding story about the cost of weddings in May and June, they always...
They trot out the footage.
And there would be my dad walking me down the aisle. And that went on for years.
Yeah.
But Lee Phillip was wonderful. It was a little scary because I idolized her. And then to have her there as we were getting dressed for the wedding, and she was just beautiful, and she was so sweet, and she actually came. She didn't have to be there, but she came because she wanted to thank us for letting her bring the cameras in to do the show. Never told us that it was going to be for a special on Children of Divorce. And I don't know if that is circulating anywhere. If it's, you know, everything is available on the internet.
If anybody knows if there's footage of that, that's got to be on YouTube someplace.
It's got to be. We never recorded it either.
Okay, here's your assignment. Do a YouTube search. WBBM TV, Channel 2, Lee Phillip, Children of Divorce.
1984.
Yeah.
It's got to be there. Well, Bob, how many years have you been married? Grandpa Bob. He's rolling his eyes as he's counting.
Yeah, you know.
Okay. I didn't say how many years does it feel like. I said how many years in reality.
Well, this year will be 36.
Oh, well, that's good.
Okay.
Yeah. And first time grandpa this year, too.
Yes.
Ron, how many years you been married?
I'm not married currently.
Okay.
So
zero.
Yes.
So,
okay. Score one in the zero column.
Children of Divorce.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
On that note, we're going to take a break. More coming up. Stay with us at WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I wonder how many times that song is going to be played in the next few days. Beatles, Here Comes the Sun, because there is this solar eclipse-y thing.
Oh my gosh.
That rumor has it. A few people are going to be paying attention to.
Yeah, Ron Brown reported in his newscast that there are states that are actually approaching this like a big emergency. So don't let that freak you out.
Yeah.
As I understand it, that's because traffic may be so bad, they want to be sure that they have enough personnel available in case there's an accident that causes the traffic to back up even more. For anyone that experienced the last one, wasn't that in 2017, Bob?
Yes.
Yeah. 2017.
We were in Florida and we
did a pinhole box.
We did a pinhole box, so we looked through the pinhole and we looked down and we saw it that way.
Yay, we just saw the eclipse. It was kind of cool, but I guess it wasn't the same as being in one of the places where it was in totality. Because remember, Tom Skilling cried when he experienced it. He was seen crying.
And Tom Skilling has come back from Hawaii, and he's going to be part of Channel 9's coverage. He's going to be in Carbondale, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. Carbondale.
Yeah. Now, Carbondale was also a site of totality in 17.
Mm-hmm.
So if there are conspiracy theories floating around that because Carbondale, if you look at the map, it's like the center of an X. So if you're in Carbondale, something auspicious may happen to you on Monday.
Apparently you and 200,000 other people.
That's right. Paying about $700 a night for a hotel room.
That's what they're claiming. So, yeah, and the state of Indiana has declared an emergency.
Yes, yes.
Well, if it's an X, then Musk is behind the whole deal.
Oh, no, no. Don't give him any ideas.
By the way, what was the difference in price? Our friend Melissa Foreman booked a room about like a year in advance.
Yes.
And what was the price when she booked it as opposed to what it is now?
Well, honestly, they were talking about $700 to $900, like at a Motel 6 in Southern Illinois. Now, I guess the hot spot is a town I'd never heard of. And I've traveled I-57 probably 1,000 times in my life going to Tennessee. Makanda. Have you ever heard of Makanda? It's outside of Carbondale, and apparently it is the number one hippie town of Illinois. That's their claim to fame, seriously. Because back in the 70s, the town was just dying, and a bunch of artists moved there, and now they have wineries, and they have these little arty enclaves. If anybody is listening in Makanda, buckle up, because the world is coming your way on Monday. You probably already know that, because they have some bed and breakfasts, and they have some little cabins there, and those have all been rented out. Oh, here's a listener going to Indy for the eclipse, $149 at the Hilton. Yay me. Well, yeah, yay you. That's from an 815 area code. But I guess if you had booked it well in advance, like Melissa did a year ago, knowing that this was going to happen, and she wanted to be a part of it. Yeah.
Because didn't we hear some places where they were charging like thousands of dollars per night, per room?
Yeah. But I guess the bottom line is, okay, if somebody will pay it.
Yeah, if that,
give
if
it
that
a
trips
shot.
Your trigger.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the town of Makanda, M-A-K-A-N-D-A, virtually an abandoned town back in the 70s when artists moved there, and now they claim it's the most hippie town in all of Illinois. Where have I been?
I've never heard of it.
A hippie town. And the few times that I've taken you down to Tennessee, down to my area where I was born in West Tennessee, we would take I-57 all the way down and then go over the bridge and get into Tennessee.
If we went through Makanda, I sure missed it.
I know, yeah. But if you headed that way, apparently it's a pretty cool place to be. And
and I guess while I have zero intention of looking skyward during the eclipse.
Well, I have glasses for you.
That was where I was going. If you're going to buy glasses, be very, very careful about the kind of glasses you're buying, because there are people scamming you, and you can really hurt your eyes if you're not careful about where you're buying the glasses from.
Yes. If you bought your glasses on Temu, no. Or Shine, no. We don't know that they're counterfeit. We're just saying that we don't know that they are legit. And it's sad to think that there are people that would make counterfeit glasses. But
in 2024, nothing surprises me. Isn't one of the keys that if you get these glasses, you shouldn't be able to see anything through them. They should be completely black.
Now, I got a pack today in the mail that came just in time so I could bring them to work and share them with Ron and anybody else who needed them for Monday. And I said I was a little concerned because, again, we don't know that they're... So as I was giving them out, I'm saying, so hear me. If you lose your vision, do not come back to me.
And dear, I love you.
But
as of midnight, it's going to be 40 years. I ain't putting those glasses on, and I ain't looking up to the sky.
But they have.
No. Okay.
Like,
no, not doing it.
Bob, you said they have to have a number, right?
The ISO number.
The ISO number. And the ISO number, it says right here, conforms to and meets the transmission requirements of ISO 12312-2. Filters for direct observation of the sun. So those numbers have to be on your glasses.
Here's my logic.
Yes.
If I'm using even those glasses,
yes,
there is less of a chance that I would have a problem.
Yes.
If I don't look at the sun, there is zero chance that I will have a problem.
You're no fun. Come on. Well, but if you do have glasses, if you do have them, you do need that ISO 12312-2 number on your glasses. You can also go to the NASA site, and they have a listing of the
manufacturers. But NASA is not selling glasses.
No.
That, because there are some people that have been saying, oh, these glasses were made by NASA. No, NASA is not making and selling glasses.
No.
That's a scam.
They've got a nice listing, though, of the companies that they approve, that they have checked, that they say are legit. They're not counterfeit. Again,
but just be careful. Please be careful.
Bob, did you say somebody was looking for glasses for their dog?
Yeah. Yeah.
For their dog?
No. No, no,
see,
and
now,
no.
Of all these things that, you know, that like places you can go, and the one that I would, if I was going to go anywhere, if I was going to do any of them, it would be the thing I saw at Cedar Point.
Which is?
It's an amusement park in Sandusky.
Yeah.
And you can ride the rides and
so you'd be on the Ferris wheel at the top of the Ferris wheel and watch a
you can watch
so you'd be even closer to the sun.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Gotta love it.
Well, I'm thinking we're going to watch WGN TV instead.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's my viewing.
But again, just to repeat the number, because somebody said, what's that number again? ISO 12312-2.
Do you want to take a picture of those glasses and post it on Facebook along with the ISO number?
Yes.
But again, we are not saying that we know for sure that this is safe. Do not sue us.
Listener just said,
we don't know.
They said the obvious 708 area codes. A scammer can print those numbers on their glasses,
sure,
too.
Exactly.
That's why, as I was sharing them with people, I was basically saying, do not come back to me.
Yeah.
Stumbling around because you cannot see well because I gave you glasses. I'm just sharing maybe I better go take them back. Julian, give me your glasses back. You're too young to go blind. Okay.
Too late. I put them on.
But if you do put them on, you're supposed to hold the glasses on the side of your head so that they stay close to your head. Any glasses that you try, you should not be able to see anything out of them.
So I will put them on, hold them close to my head, and watch Channel 9.
Watch TV, okay. You're so much fun.
40 years worth of fun.
I know, 40. Yes. Actually,
yeah, 40 years we've been married, but there was some fun. Well, we better take a break.
Well, you know you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and shout, throw my hands up and shout, throw my head back and shout. Come on now, don't forget to say you will. Don't forget to say yeah, 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 yeah. Say you will. Say it right now, baby.
Say it right now, baby. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Before we get to the shouts, I'm losing my voice. I'm so excited. Before we get to the shouts, I want to let you know what's coming up tonight, because we have a bunch of things up tonight. A little after 10 o'clock, we're going to talk with Liz Smith. She is the Vice President and Event Director of Expona. Expona is like the world's largest music audio exhibit. It's going on in Schaumburg next weekend. It is so cool. So we're going to find out all about that. Then a little later, we're going to talk with our friend Matthew Hoffman. He is a film historian, and we're going to talk with him about the Pickwick Theater and how they're celebrating the 85th anniversary of The Wizard of Oz. Then a little later, an extraordinarily talented woman is going to be joining us, Dee Alexander. If you have ever heard Dee, you have heard some of the best jazz singing you will ever hear.
Yeah.
And she is doing a tribute to Billie Holiday. We're going to talk about that. Then a little later, Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, is going to be joining us. And we're going to talk cars. And I should mention, mark this on your calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, Sue Foley. We haven't talked to Sue in a long time. Extraordinary blues singer, guitarist. She's going to be joining us. She has a great new album out, and she's going to be appearing April 17th at Space up in Evanston. That I should also mention that next week will be our last show. Notice how I paused. not our last show. It will be our last show from Chicago for a while, because starting April 20th through May 11th, we're going to be down in Florida, and we're going to be broadcasting from the facilities of the Gulf Coast College, and we're going to take you down there with us.
Yep. And we're going to take, driving to work, we're going to take boring pictures of the Gulf and white sand and waves lapping up and palm trees.
I'm still amazed by people who say, oh, it doesn't look the same as usual. No, because we'll be in Florida!
Well, they like the Chicago pictures better. They're a little livelier. By the way, I did put up pictures on our trip in tonight. Mm-hmm. It was the bumpiest trip. I felt like we were just driving on a washboard.
Lakeshore Drive.
Oh, my gosh.
DeShambeau Lakeshore Drive is the prettiest and worst maintained drive on the planet.
It's getting harder to take a decent picture on the drive because I'm
And I understand that, well, we have the temperature changes, yada, 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 yeah. But we need to get a better grade of peanut butter that they use to repair.
Oh, my gosh. Well, anyway, a few seconds ago we said we'd do a little shout out. What were we listening to the other night where they said, if you'd like a shout out, send us a note? And I said, hey, you're copying us. It was sports event. They said, if you'd like us to give you a shout out.
Oh, I know exactly what it was. We were listening to Lennon DJ.
Okay. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And they probably heard us do this.
Right.
Right. Okay. I want to say, these folks are tuned in tonight. If I miss you, I'm sorry. But there's a whole bunch of people listening all over the country. Davey's a Mount Prospect, and he's from Sen High School, class of 64. I'm 73. He's 64. Dave Wex is in Mountain Home, Arkansas, tuned in. Stacy's in Algonquin. Our top fans and best friends of WGN are Chuck Snitchler and Hobart, Bobby Danis out in Sammich, and Patricia Tintari in Highland, Indiana. Also, Diane Vasquez, who is our graphics guru, she's done another great graphic for us for the month of April. And thank you, Diane. We received some lovely anniversary cards from our friend Marge Ritchie, who never forgets us, and George and Bonnie out in Elgin. They're members of the Johnny Fan Club. Robin's in Dyer, Indiana. Bonnie's in Butternut Beach, Wisconsin. Jim G is in Wisconsin. Celine's in Chicago. Scott is in South Dakota listening on his Marantz stereo. Yes.
Cool.
Yes. George is in Augusta, Georgia. Bill Hill is in Hobart. Liz is in Naperville. And Catherine is in Naperville as well. Catherine Lissick. Let me get over here and say that Fred Hussar is in Lyons. And Norb Rosansky is in Aurora. Brian Lefevre is our regular listener in Bridgeport. Thanks, Brian. Janet Appenzeller is tuned in. I just like saying Appenzeller. Also listening tonight, Jeffrey Welshance is in Elkins, West Virginia. Jan Reinhardt is in the laboratory, tuned in. Peter Jacobowitz is listening. Gordon Larson is in Flowery Branch, Georgia. And he did something.
He sent us a picture.
Yes.
It is such a cool picture. It's on our Facebook page.
A Flowery Branch.
Yeah.
A picture that he took right there in Georgia. Mary Gold is in Tinley Park. John Couture is in Warren, Michigan. Aaron Baum is tuned in from Wells Beach, Maine. Robin Aiken in Port Charlotte, Florida. Patty Ford. Beverly Goodall tuned in. Linda Moeller, not from the Oklahoma Panhandle, but from Nevada, Missouri, for a college reunion tonight. Janet Gellert's in Gainesville, Florida. So I think I counted about 10 or 11 states that we are being heard in tonight, and we do appreciate that. Let me quickly jump over here. Also tuned in is Elizabeth Holland in Naperville, and Priscilla Gilbert and Susan Altman. Naperville's coming in great. The best place in the country to live. Number one, right? Number one city in the country. Lois
Heron. And don't they have the most twins?
Well, they did at one time. I think that was back in the 80s and 90s.
I thought they still held the record.
They had an unusual number of twins in their school. I'm not sure. Somebody from Naperville could tell
us. Then there's Lynn Haven, Florida, where Vincent, who is a friend of ours, he was one of how many? There were three sets of twins in his family.
Brothers.
And in Lynn Haven, Florida, there's this little area where there are tons of twins
in the families. Classroom, the teachers would have like as many as 6, 7, 8 sets of twins in a classroom. And that's not a really big town, so there must be something in the water there. Also, Patricia Koch is listening in Hobart. And Nancy Hollins tuned in from Northbrook. Margaret Moore in Albuquerque, the land of enchantment. Well, thank you for tuning in. Ken Hartman, Tracy Douglas in Savannah, Georgia. Gary Gray in Lisbon, Wisconsin. And Les Nelson in Oswego. I think I got most of you. If I missed you, I apologize. But thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you'll stick with us tonight because we have a full show this evening. John is in Lansing, Michigan. He just checked in at 312-981-7200. Sherry Hanrahan is in Romeoville. And a couple of texts from 847. Maybe Tom, with the help of Mitsubishi, can show Steve an eclipse. We've road tested an eclipse before. Yes. Oh, a 630 area code is checking in from Kapay, Hawaii.
Where is Kapay, Hawaii? It's in Hawaii.
It's K-A-P-A-A. Is it Kapa or Kapay? Maybe Kapa. I don't know. So maybe they can enlighten us. Also, I am not going to wear any glasses. I'm not going to use any device. I am going to put my head down until this stupid event passes. That's what one of our listeners had to say.
Okay.
This stupid event. Well, yeah, you know, as I said earlier today, we got to talk about the eclipse for a few minutes. I think there's a law that says we had to cover it.
We get a tax deduction for talking about it. The listeners, because we talked about it before the 15th.
The 100% sure way of viewing a solar eclipse is to project the image. Then a couple people said, just be safe. Just watch it on television. Bob Fukuda sent me a link to places where you can actually live stream it. And I'll put that up on our Facebook page, too. Mm-hmm. So if you want to keep that in your back pocket, and you can live stream it and not even go outside your house on Monday.
But I'm still going to watch Channel 9.
Okay. We got a lot coming up tonight. We hope that you will stay with us right here on WGN.
And, we need to stop talking.
We do.
Okay, so let's do that. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. What the people need is something to make them happy, like listen to the music. And boy, are you going to be able to do that April 12th through the 14th, when the largest high-end audio show in North America lands in Schaumburg.
Mm-hmm.
It is the Expona Audio Expo North America.
And you're
such
saying,
a cool.
How is this happening? And I didn't know about it. Well, that's why we're going to spend some time talking with Liz Smith. She's the vice president and event director of Expona. Liz, thank you for joining us tonight. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
Now, we're using the word Expona, A-X-P-O-N-A. Explain to our audience what that stands for.
So it stands for Audio Expo North America. So like the A is audio, and then the original founders of the show kind of kept Expo in there, and then mm-hmm. the NA for North America.
How did we get so lucky to have this show in right here in our area in Schaumburg? How did that happen?
Well, it happened because we wanted the show to grow. We wanted it to be accessible from all over the country. So naturally, you know, Chicago was mm-hmm. The Chicago area was the first thing that that we thought of when my company started running the show and felt like it was the best place to have a home for the show.
And we understand that this is one of those things that if you have any interest in audio, hi-fi, records, this is for you. There are listening rooms. You get your hands on some cool gear, and there's an expo hall and record fair. Lay it out for us. Tell us what all is going on up there.
I mean, it's for anyone who's interested. I mean, really, if you love music, like this show is for you, but especially if you're into you know, high performance audio, like high fidelity audio. But what we do is we take over the entire convention center, the entire hotel, and we actually have the hotel clear out the furniture from the rooms, and then our exhibitors set up the sound systems in the hotel rooms and in the other meeting rooms of the convention center. So, because if you're gonna shop for audio gear, or even just to go to the show to experience everything, you can't have sound systems competing with each other from room to room. So it's a really experiential show, because you get to sit and listen and compare all of these different systems that are set up in these various rooms.
Now, can you actually buy something there, or is it kind of like the Chicago Auto Show, where you can go, you can look, you can get an idea of what you want to buy, but you can't actually physically purchase it there?
I mean, it depends on what you're looking for. I mean, sometimes you can definitely buy something and then have it, you know, eventually like shipped to you if you're on the market for headphones or something like that. Or sometimes they're the models that are at the show. Sometimes those are like ready to go home with someone if at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have the record fair. So, I mean, there's definitely things to buy and take home that day.
And I assume you're talking actual physical vinyl records. Yes.
Yes. The vinyl resurgence is real. Yeah, we have several vendors who have just crates and crates of records.
Be still, so my heart.
Part of that.
And this is really cool, because this is 1 week before Record Store Day is the following Saturday.
Yeah.
So you're on the cutting edge of people's, you know, minds being on the subject of, oh, vinyl's still out there. Yeah, vinyl sold better than CDs last year.
Yeah,
so
vinyl is the largest selling form of physical media that you can get right now.
Very much out there. Now, you were in town last year. You were in Schaumburg last year for Expona. It sounds like it's even bigger this year. Is that possible, that there are more exhibitors, there are more options for things? Because it's for the entire 3 days, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's 3 days. It's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We have 200 listening rooms. And really, the areas that have grown, like our headphone area, our Ear Gear Expo, is bigger than last year. So there's a larger variety of those headphones and personal audio in that space. And then in the expo hall, where you really can look for turntables or cables or like any types of accessories, or like the records that we were just talking about, there's more of those record exhibitors this year as well.
So do you buy a ticket for the entire 3 days, or can you, for those people listening, say, well, I'm only off on Sunday and I want to stop in on Sunday, can you buy a one-day pass? How does that work?
Yeah, you can buy a one-day pass, a two-day pass, or a three-day pass. We also, you know, if someone's like looking to bring like their whole family, you know, children under the age of 14 are free. And we kind of have a Gen Z pass for ages 15 to 26. So pretty much there's a pass there for everybody. And we really encourage people to, you know, bring their friends, bring their families. Cause whenever I talk to somebody that, you know, came with a friend, like I was like, how'd you hear about the show? And they're like, oh, like my friend brought me, and they can't believe that the show exists and they have such a great time.
Now, I've got to say, you mentioned the Gen Z pass. That may be the first time I've seen Gen Z given a break.
Yeah.
You know, usually it's like students or you know, 6 to 12 year olds, but no, we're talking Gen Z. Your ticket is only $15, and that's for you if you're 15 to 26, and I think that's really cool, because now you're appealing to a younger audience. It's
and
going to get introduced.
That's obviously a very reasonable price.
Yeah, very much so. Well, if you're in your car right now and you're saying, I can't write all this stuff down while I'm driving, all you have to do is go to our page on Facebook, and we have a link for you to go to AXPONA.com. And it all happens next weekend. That's why we wanted to have Liz on tonight to talk about what this entails. And we'll come right back with Liz Smith, the Vice President and Event Director of Expona, coming to Schaumburg right here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking with Liz Smith. She is the Vice President and Event Director of Expona, Audio Expo North America, which is the largest high-end audio show in North America. It's going on in Schaumburg, April 12th through the 14th, and you were just listening to Bobby Broom, who is going to be performing at Expona. Liz, tell us about that.
Yes, so, after kind of spending your day listening to, recorded music, we like to have concerts on Friday and Saturday night to listen to some live music just to kind of refresh your ears. So Bobby Broom's our Friday night concert. He's a, local musician in Chicago. He plays jazz. He's a really excellent guitarist, and we're really looking forward to that concert.
Bobby is a local jazz legend. He works with Ravinia.
That was Bobby you heard.
Yeah, that was Bobby playing that wonderful guitar.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a good show.
And who's entertaining on Saturday night?
And Saturday night is the Secret Sisters. They're a duo. It's mm-hmm. two sisters, and they're kind of like a little folky, mm-hmm. little country. They have really beautiful lyrics and harmonies, and so it's like really a treat to bring them to the show too. They have a new album coming out, and I saw them a few years ago and thought it'd be great to bring them to the show.
So if you have your ticket, your pass to spend Friday, Saturday at the show, you can stick around for the concert. That's covered as part of your ticket price, right?
Yes, that's included with the ticket.
So since you are organizing this thing, how many exhibitors are involved in the show next weekend?
That's such a good question. it's complicated. No, there's hundreds of exhibitors, because there are audio dealers, distributors, and manufacturers who exhibit, and sometimes they work together to set up the system, so there could be multiple exhibitors working together in a room. So hundreds of exhibitors, probably like over 600. Different brands that you could listen to from all around the world.
And you can click on the website, you can click on the schedule to see what's happening when. For example, I just clicked on Friday just to see what was happening on Friday afternoon at 1:15 in a one-hour hands-on seminar. Analog evangelist extraordinaire Michael Fremmer will show how to correctly set up a turntable, install a cartridge, and optimize its performance. Wow, that's pretty cool. And he's going to have a Q&A segment, and that's going to be on Friday afternoon from 1:15 to 2:15.
Let me take you back to the very beginning. As we said, that this is an extraordinary event, listening rooms, expo hall, record fair. Take me back to the first time you thought, what if we decided to do an event? How did this happen? How did it germinate? And when did you say, we're actually going to do this? And when did you actually realize, oops, we got a success on our hands?
So Expona was founded by a gentleman named Steve Davis, and he was part of, he at one time was an audio dealer, has kind of had his career in the audio industry for a long time. And I think one day he decided that he was going to, launch this show. There's been like a few audio shows in the country, mm-hmm. through the years. And he held the show for 3 years, and it started off in Florida. It was in Jacksonville. It was in Atlanta. And then, the company I work for, we actually acquired the show from him to start running it. And because at that time, he kind of felt like it was growing and kind of needed mm-hmm. An events company to take it over. So the company I work for, we acquired it in 2013, and we ran the first show in 2014. And really since then, the first show that I was at was in 2014, and we were out at the Westin O'Hare in, yeah, we're out at the Westin O'Hare, and the I think we had like around like 60 rooms and like listening rooms, and now we have 200, like 202. Wow. But so it's really been amazing to see how much it's grown, and I mean, and that's just one, you know, point there, which is like the listening rooms. I mean, the number of people coming from all over the country and from the Chicago area, it's just grown so much every single year. And even seeing, you know, the variety of attendees that come, you know, because a lot of audio enthusiasts come every year, but we really try to bring new people to the show every year. And I always see new faces, which is really exciting.
You mentioned that you can see all kinds of equipment. Give me, with $1 being the lowest point and $5 billion being the highest point, if somebody wants to come out and see equipment, what's your price range on equipment that you can see there, from headphones to who knows what?
I mean, like, headphones can be a few $100s. I mean, cables can be, you know, $50 to thousands of dollars. Loudspeakers can be hundreds of dollars to tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, you can see a system that's worth like over $100,000, if not more. I mean, sometimes I don't have all the details of every single exhibitor, but like, you know, we've had in the past like a $1 million system at the show.
Wow.
With all the pieces put together.
Okay, yeah. Liz, this is just between the three of us, okay? Price is no object. What's your dream system?
What does Liz want in her house?
Oh my goodness!
I'll tell you what.
So many options.
Can I tell you what I want that you have at the show? It's that turntable that's on its side.
Those are so cool.
That is amazing. How
that
if you don't
really
have
cool.
the space, you can hang it on the wall and you can actually play your. I'm like, that blows my mind. I would just invite friends over to watch me play records. It would be so cool. Now,
yeah, just the record player itself is entertaining.
Yeah. Now, of course, we wear headphones to do our show, so I looked up some of the headphone information, and I came across a Perio headphone system. A Perio, from the Latin meaning to uncover, open, or reveal. And I learned here on your website the Perio headphone system will be demonstrated from $32,000. From $32,000.
From?
Yes.
30. So that bargain basement price.
30. That's amazing. I just want to go to see something like that and find out why would it be $32,000? And again, folks, you don't have to be a nerd. There are things that nerds will love, like the over-the-top audio enthusiast. But if you just like sound, you just like music, right, Liz? There's like something for everybody.
Yeah, there's absolutely something for everybody, and if you've only like listened to your music, you know, like lately maybe on your phone or you know, maybe like
your computer.
Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah,
you don't want to say anything disparaging.
Go ahead. You're among friends.
But if you go sit and listen, and it's amazing what you can hear, like the detail in music if you listen to it on a really, really good system. And and it doesn't, if you're just sitting out, like, I mean, you don't have to invest a lot to really have some excellence and have it make
That's
a
true.
Difference. There is, you know, you can, like I said, have that $1 million system, but there's a lot of excellence that's like really affordable, and it just makes a difference. Like, so much gets compressed with how we listen to music today, and I don't know, like, everyone's like, your eyes could just be open to like this whole new world, and I guess your ears are just open to this
whole
new world.
Yeah.
And you know, while we're all about the modern technology and cell phones and computers and blah blah blah, and they have improved vastly from their beginnings, but it is an eye-opening, actually ear-opening experience when you hear what you're not hearing through the little computer or phone that you're used to working with.
It's funny that we started out with the Doobie Brothers because, you know, I'm going back to the very first time I heard Dolby stereo. And it was Doobie Brothers because that's what they were known for. And I was in a room, a small room with four speakers, and I was like, oh, I'll never listen to music again unless it's in Dolby, because this was such a wonderful experience.
And was that a quadraphonic system?
Quadraphonic, yeah, absolutely.
For people who don't know, that this was, sadly, it wasn't very well marketed at the time, but literally you would have two speakers in front, two speakers behind, and you would have...
You would feel it.
Different stuff coming out of all... It was like you were in the middle of the band as they were playing. Yeah. It was wonderful stuff.
So you got listening rooms that you can visit at Expona. You know what, Liz, before we say goodnight, you should tell everybody, go to AXPONA, and it's next weekend. And what else do they need to know?
You know, you can buy tickets online. You can just decide to show up that day. There's plenty to do all weekend. You know, every day is fantastic. And, you know, check it out. It's fun. I mean, that's the message that I'm trying to get out. It's just like going to an audio show. It's fun. It's like, if you love music, this is just a great way to spend a weekend.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight and giving us the lowdown on it, because we were just tickled to find out that it's right here in our neck of the woods. I mean, it's so big, and it's getting bigger every year. So thanks, Liz. It's nice to meet you and nice to have you on the radio with us.
Oh, thank you so much. Great meeting you as well.
Sounds like a really cool show. And you're right. I want to check out that system with the vinyl. It's just hanging on the wall. That is so cool.
Well, I want to try some headphones that cost $32,000.
Yeah.
I'm all about that. You know, I got a birthday coming up. We're going to take a break. Stay with us here on WGN.
We hope to see you to the wonderful Wizard of Oz. Here he is, the Wizard of a Wizard. Ever a wizard there was. If ever, ever a wizard was, the Wizard of Oz is one. Because of the wonderful things he does. We're out to see the Wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Steve King and Johnny Putnam at WGN Radio. And I know that that's going to be an earwig for the rest of the night.
I'll be skipping down the hall during commercial break, singing It's Off to See the Wizard, the Wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Skipping down that little yellow brick road that we have.
The year was 1939, 85 years ago. 41 movies were released by MGM, and at least one of those movies is now recognized today, 85 years later, as one of the greatest of all American movies, and that movie is The Wizard of Oz. Joining us right now is a guy that's going to tell you about something you might want to put on your calendar. He's Matthew Hoffman, and he's with the Pickwick Theater and Park Ridge Public Library, and they've got a big thing coming up for The Wizard of Oz at 85. How are you tonight, Matthew?
I'm doing all right. Thank you so much, Steve and Johnny, for having me back on.
Sure.
I think when we last spoke, we were celebrating the 60th anniversary of From Russia with Love last year at the
Theater.
Yes. And now we put the We're Off to See the Wizard earwig in your ear.
Yes.
So, one quick thing that has changed, besides the Pickwick Theater, I'm now the film historian at the Wilmette Public Library. So I'm very excited about that.
That's right. What a great gig. Can we talk about you personally before we talk about what's happening for the 85th anniversary? At what point in your life did you become so obsessed with film that it became your profession? It became your passion that you are able to do for a living, which is really amazing and pretty cool.
Well, thank you. I grew up watching the original Son of Sven Gulli with Rich Coe. So I got interested in the old classic horror movies. And as a kid growing up, I would watch the old Bud Abbott, Lou Costello movies, the old Blondie movies, Ma and Pa Kettle, all types of genres and stuff. And my dad, who passed away last year, was a huge classic movie fan, so he kind of got me interested in film. And I went to Columbia College, where I was a film student for a couple of years before switching to creative writing. And there I met a wonderful film teacher, Scott Marks, who basically gave me my first gig. I became the projectionist at the LaSalle Bank Theater in Chicago, which was a mom and pop revival theater that operated on Saturday nights, showed all kinds of obscure films that no one had ever heard of before. But that kind of got the attention at the Park Ridge Public Library. And in 2009, they asked me to do a classic film series, which became their most popular program there at the Park Ridge Library. And the theater, the Pickwick Theater, right across the street, got wind of the big success that we were having at the library. So they asked me in 2013, just over 10 years ago, to start a classic film series for them. And since then, it's just kind of taken off. I mean, before the pandemic, we were averaging about 500 people at the Pickwick Theater.
Mm-hmm.
We're slowly starting to get back, you know, to those pre-pandemic numbers. But mm-hmm. I love the fact that I have the opportunity to present the films that, you know, inspired me growing up. And over the years, we've done so many big events and stuff. And it's just very rewarding to see all types of people coming to these film events, not just older people who remember these films when they were first released, but it's a wide-ranging demographic. I mean, it's young people, guys bringing their dates, so it's really rewarding. And then I'm always in the lobby as the film lets out, and I hear the feedback from the audience, and you get so many wonderful comments from people saying that this was the first time they ever experienced it. You know, movies create memories, but when you see it in the theater, it creates a memory that stays with you.
Yeah.
And that's really wonderful.
And the Pickwick Theater is such a wonderful venue in Park Ridge. Let me take you back to your reaction the first time you ever saw The Wizard of Oz. And I'm going to give you mine. The first time I ever saw The Wizard of Oz, my mom took me to the Avalon Theater on 79th Street, south side of Chicago. And we went in. And my first reaction was, oh, I thought this was supposed to be in color. And I stayed with it for a while, and then all of a sudden, whoa, hello. I was, I don't know how old I was, like a seven or something like that, but it was, not only did I get involved with the plot, but the visuals, everything about that movie was just, whoa, this is something special. So what was your first introduction to that movie?
It was on broadcast television, because they would always show that film every year around Thanksgiving time.
Yes.
So it wasn't until the film's 50th anniversary that I actually saw it in a theater for the first time. But I remember every year, you know, it was always a tradition to see The Wizard of Oz, and it just everything about the film just really struck a chord with me. And to this day, I would rank it as probably one of my 10 favorite films of all time. You know, I can still remember my first reaction when Dorothy and her friends are going down that Art Deco hallway, that corridor, to see the great and powerful wizard, and just the sense of fear and trepidation. And, you know, as a kid, you know, 7, 8 years old, I mean, it really makes such an impact. You know,
yeah.
Of course, the flying monkeys.
I was going to say, I think I was about 14 before I got over my fear of flying monkeys.
Sure.
I was like, oh.
You're not the only one.
I mean, that was really effective, too. I mean, even to this day, as I'm saying it, I'm thinking, maybe you're not completely over that. Because, and
no,
it's one thing to see it on broadcast TV, even if you have a 60-inch TV. It's different than seeing it on the big screen, because I believe I probably saw it on its 25th anniversary, and I want to say that was at the Century or the Riviera Theater.
Okay.
And it was a special showing of it. And I remember having seen it earlier on television on what was probably a 19-inch screen. Seeing it on the big screen was life-changing.
Actually, Matthew, let me hold you on that for a second. My brother Lee is a film aficionado. From day one, he has loved movies, but his introduction was big screen. Your introduction was largely small screen Svengoolie television. So what was your reaction in watching something like The Wizard of Oz, which you'd seen umpteen times on the small screen, and then all of a sudden on the big screen. What did that do to you as a film historian?
Well, it really makes you realize that you can't really fully experience a film until you see it in a theater, in a community yep. environment with other people. You could really gauge the film's power, and there are so many moments in that film where, you know, that just it'll bring tears to your eyes.
Absolutely.
And seeing it in a group, I mean, it really hits home, and you really understand the power of film when you're in that kind of a environment where it overtakes you. You know,
mm-hmm.
so much today is, you know, streaming on demand where you control the film, but in a theater, the film controls you, and it's kind of a life-changing experience. And that's why I go out of my way to see my favorite films in a theatrical environment. You know, another classic film that I love is King Kong, mm-hmm. the original. So anytime that film is playing in the Chicagoland area, I'll definitely be there to see it. So it's a unique experience that a lot of people don't get to experience, and that's why I'm so excited to be presenting this 85th anniversary of The Wizard of Oz on Wednesday, April 10th at 7 o'clock. And the following day, April 11th, we'll have a 1 p.m. matinee. But it's the Wednesday show that will have all the extras.
Hold your thought. We've piqued their interest. We're going to take a break now that we've got their attention. Yes, there's going to be a showing of this on the big screen on Wednesday. And there's going to be some extra special things as a part of the event, the 85th anniversary on Wednesday night. Talking with Matthew Hoffman. So stay with us here on WGN.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby.
What a classic song. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking with film historian Matthew Hoffman about the 85th anniversary celebration of The Wizard of Oz. It's going to be at the Pickwick Theater in Park Ridge.
Now, you said on Wednesday night there's going to be a showing, but there's some special things that are going to happen. If you can't make it, you can see the movie on Thursday for a matinee. But what's going to happen on Wednesday night for this big celebration, Matthew?
Well, Steve and Johnny, on Wednesday night, we're going to have radio host Steve Darnall of Those Were the Days, who is on a different radio
mm-hmm.
station.
Mm-hmm.
He will be our special guest in the lobby starting at 6 p.m. He'll have copies of his spring 2024 issue of Nostalgia Digest, which features a cover story article I wrote on the 100th anniversary of the MGM studio.
Oh, nice.
And what film better?
Please tell Steve that we said hello.
The Halcyon days of The Wizard of Oz than, MGM. I mean, The Wizard of Oz, I mean, certainly is one of the defining films of that studio.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, The Wizard of Oz, this is only the second time in 10 seasons where we've repeated a film. In addition to Steve Darnall, we'll have organist Jay Warren. He'll be back to perform the pre-show music on the theater's original 1928 Mighty Wurlitzer organ. And the pre-show music will start around 6:45. But before the feature presentation, we'll also have the very first film version of The Wizard of Oz, a silent film from 1910, which Jay Warren will be accompanying on the organ. Now, the film is only 13 minutes, and we'll be showing that right before the 1939 version.
What?
How cool.
So I'm very excited. And, of course, we always make this a big event for everyone, so some of us will be in costume.
That's my next question. What are you going to be wearing, Matthew?
Are you going to be wearing your Tin Man outfit?
Are you the Cowardly Lion?
I will say it will be one of the three.
It will be.
It'll either be the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, or the Cowardly Lion. It will be one of those three.
Okay, you tease.
You're not going to be the Wicked Witch of the West?
The Wicked Witch. No, I'll be happy to stop by as the Wicked Witch. How's that?
Well, the last time I showed this, back in 2017, I was the mayor of Munchkinland. So... We had fun with it.
That's good. Can I take you back to the 13-minute version? I'm like, where have I been? That was in 1910?
What was 1910? I mean, there were several versions of The Wizard of Oz before the one that we're familiar with. I believe there was one in 1925.
Really?
That was less successful. But the one in 1910, I'm pretty sure it was produced by author L. Frank Baum. But, yeah, it's it's an interesting take. Obviously, they're quite limited in effects and stuff,
yeah.
But it's an enchanting little film, and it's really going to come alive with Jay Warren's accompaniment.
So. Absolutely. I'm still trying to imagine flying monkeys in 1910 and trying to get all of that in 13 minutes is amazing.
In fact, Matthew, that's for right. a second, let me ask you to put on your film historian hat. So the film had been done a couple times before the classic version we know. What, to your knowledge, what made MGM look at this property and say, you know, this has been done before, but I think we could do a little different twist on it? Do you have any idea of the history of how MGM decided to take a flyer on this?
Well, I think the success of Walt Disney and Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs got MGM looking at material for children. So they went back and they went specifically to the Frank Baum books. And I know it was producer Mervyn LeRoy and Arthur Freed who sort of spearheaded this production. But I think the success of Walt Disney really kind of inspired MGM. Of course, there had been Alice in Wonderland. I think that was earlier in the 30s, not quite as successful a film over at Paramount. But I think with MGM, they were the number one studio in Hollywood, so they had the ability to, you know, put together the greatest musicians, you know, all the production values, the technicolor, the sets, the costume design, and of course the cast, the studio contract performers, you know, Judy Garland, who I believe was only 15 when she was first cast for the film. But I think MGM wanted to really, you know, reach the child in all of us, you know, and that's one of the themes of the film, capturing that innocence of childhood, you know, the innocence of Judy Garland, you know, before the turmoil of her later life. Of course, there's days when we all wish to find something better over the rainbow, only to realize that something is not any better than what we have right here in the present in terms of, you know, family and home. So it's a film that touched so many people of so many generations, not just the children, but, you know, the parents. And it was just a film that sort of grew, you know, over the decades.
I believe the actor, oh, darn, I can't think of his name. He played Chester on Gunsmoke. He was originally supposed to play the Tin Man, I believe. Am I correct about that?
Well, it Buddy was Ebsen. Buddy Ebsen.
Buddy Ebsen.
Yeah, Buddy Ebsen.
Buddy Ebsen was originally cast. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Buddy Ebsen was going to play the Scarecrow, and then he switched parts with Ray Bolger. So Buddy Ebsen was going to play the Tin Man, but he had an allergic reaction to the makeup.
Paint, wasn't it?
To the makeup, yeah.
Yeah.
To the makeup. So he was out, and he was replaced by Jack Haley, who was borrowed from 20th Century Fox. Mm-hmm. So you had basically these three old-time vaudevillians, you know, Ray Bolger, Jack Haley, and Burt Lahr as part of the cast. And it's one of the greatest ensemble casts of all time. And, of course, throw in Margaret Hamilton and the great Frank Morgan, who has, like, eight different roles in the film.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, because I've seen the ticket online, the Wizard of Oz 85th anniversary ticket for Wednesday night. It's only $12, $10 if you purchase prior to April 10th. Steve Darnell, our buddy from Nostalgia Digest, will be there.
And again, I don't know if you heard, but when you get a chance, tell Steve we said hello. It's been way too long since we've been able to hang out with him.
And that guy in the lobby that's going to be dressed as, I don't know, the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, or a Munch is going to be our guest, Matthew Hoffman. And thank you for doing this, Matthew. This is really wonderful. And again, there will be a replay of the movie on Thursday, but you won't get all the extras, but that's a matinee, so more people can come out to see it. All the details are on our Facebook page. You can just click right through to the Pickwick and get a complete rundown, times and prices and all that good stuff. Thank you for joining us, Matthew. Always a pleasure.
More coming up. Stay with us at WGN Radio.
Like a little old-fashioned music box with just one time to play. My heart keeps singing, I love you, 24 hours a day. Like a little old-fashioned music box that skips a note or two. My heart keeps missing a heartbeat, singing a song about you. And although the song we sing is old, still the sweetest story ever told. Like a little old-fashioned music box that skips a note or two. My heart keeps missing a heartbeat, singing a song about you.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I love so many things about that.
It's so good listening with headphones on, too. I'm like, oh, do we have to talk? Oh, it's so good.
Man.
You are listening to the voice of Dee Alexander. And if you're from Chicago, you say, I know that name. You should know her and her music, too, because she is truly a Chicago treasure. And she's got a show coming up next week you need to know about. Dee, thank you so much for joining us tonight on WGN. How are you?
Hi, how are you? So happy to be here with you. How you doing?
Good, good. I tell you, listening to that with headphones on, I'm looking at Steve, he's looking at me, we're like, do we have to interrupt her?
Exactly. We just wanted to leave the speakers up loud and let it go. And
it was recorded so beautifully, too. And can I just tell you at the outset, one of the things I love about your style of singing is you tell us a story when you sing, because we love the competition shows, you know, The Voice and American Idol. But I get so frustrated when young people get up there and they're doing vocal calisthenics and they go, oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to go on through. And I'm like, they don't even know the words they're singing. Come on. Right?
And it's all about the exaggerated vibrato.
And the calisthenics. So thank you for telling a story in a song.
And let's not forget the modulation. You know, they have to have that modulation, and then the audience can go, wow, that's fantastic. You know?
Yeah.
Let's not forget that. And I use that term all the time, vocal calisthenics. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Well, there's so much to talk about, but let me take you back to the beginning. What was your... what was the thing that made you want to do this, and what kind of an education did you have? Because I'm sorry, I don't mean to be too flowery, but damn, you're good.
Oh, well, let me tell you, I owe it all to my mom. My mother was my first education, my first teacher when it came to this music, because as long as I can remember, Billie Holiday was always in my life. My mother could not do laundry. Let me tell you, I was the one that did laundry. She would just wash everything together. I can't tell you how many times I went to Catholic school with a pink blouse on that was supposed to be white, because she would just throw everything in the laundry together. So I did the laundry on Saturdays, and on Sundays, she did the ironing. And while she ironed, she played her music. So I have two younger brothers, and we were awakened many mornings to the music of Billie Holiday, amongst all of the other greats.
Wow.
And so that's where it all began. I've always loved music because my mother always had music playing. And she still does to this day, you know. So
you knew, as a kid, you knew the music of Sarah Vaughan, and you knew Dinah Washington and Nina Simone. You were exposed to that as a young person.
As far as I can remember, probably 3, 4, or 5 years old, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Now,
there's a story that my mother tells. Is every time we get together for a family gathering, she always tells a story how I would come into the kitchen in my onesie, you know, the little one piece that you put on toddlers, and I'd come into the kitchen rubbing my eyes and asking her, "Mommy, who is that lady crying about her man?"
Oh, that's sweet.
And it was Billie Holiday. And I just always remembered loving her voice, not quite understanding it because I was a child, but loving the aura of her voice. It was just enchanting.
Well, for a second, let me cut to the chase. Speaking of Billie Holiday, you are going to be doing a tribute to Billie Holiday at City Winery. You want to tell us all about that?
Absolutely. We're so happy to be celebrating Billie Holiday on April 10th at City Winery at 7:30 with the phenomenal group of gentlemen, the Metropolitan Jazz Octet. They are my brothers from other mothers. And we got together initially. Jim Galloretto, I met him at a fundraiser, actually a children's charity that John McLean, another phenomenal musician, puts on every Christmas at the Green Mill. John invited me to come there and sing. And Jim Galloretto was there. And after he heard me sing, he came up to me and says, "Wow, you know, I really love your voice. I'd really love to do something with you." And so we started talking, and he said, "Hey, how do you feel about doing a celebration of Billie Holiday?" I said, "Oh, my God, I love that idea." So myself, Jim Galloretto, and John Cornegay, who's also one of the arrangers in the group, we got together, and our aim, especially for me, I knew it was important to share some of the familiar songs that people are familiar with Billie, but I also wanted to touch on the more obscure songs. This is a teaching mechanism so that people will become more aware of her vast discography. Hmm. So a lot of things ended up on the cutting floor, but what we ended up with, we were very pleased with.
When you're approaching the music of Billie Holiday, aren't you walking a little bit of a vocal tightrope? On one hand, you want to honor, pay tribute to her legacy. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you want to say, "And today I'm here."
Absolutely. My intention is never, there's no way I could duplicate what Billie does. The only thing I can do is honor her by my interpretation of the music that she sang. And that's my aim for any of the music that I do by any artist that have paved the way for us. I'm not going to stand there and try to sound like Billie, but I'd like to honor her, and I think she would be pleased with that as well. I could hear her say, "Do you? You know, don't try to do me." So that's what I always try to do, you know, with my own style and my own voice.
I think I've read where you said basically your mantra in life is be true to myself.
To thine own self be true.
True.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That we need that on a T-shirt, don't we?
We sure do, front and back.
All right. We're talking with Dee Alexander. Wednesday at the City Winery, it's Too Hot for Words, the music of Billie Holiday featuring Dee Alexander. We'll take a quick break and come right back here on WGN.
If you're kind of lonely, all by your own way, then nothing but the blues are brewing.
Johnny Putman of WGN Radio, and that's D. Alexander. Put your hand on the radio and say amen. Yes. Man, that's good.
D's with us on the phone. D, born in Chicago, raised in Chicago, right?
That's correct. Born on the west side of Chicago. I still live on the west side of Chicago. I can see the United Center from my back porch.
And we have something in common. We grew up in the 60s where we, thankfully, we had a great selection of radio stations that played all kinds of music, right?
I'm so glad I grew up when I did. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And we were exposed to all types of music. I listened to everything. I loved Blue Eyed Soul. We listened to WLS. Listened to WVON. Mm-hmm. When WVON would go off at a certain time, then we'd listen to WLS all night long.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was exposed to all types of music. And then, of course, gospel music as well. So, yeah.
I said at the outset that if you're from Chicago, you know the name D. Alexander, and you should know of her singing, too, that you are, in my opinion, a Chicago treasure. Did you? And I know you've played all the big jazz festivals. I know that your music is loved worldwide. But did you ever feel the pull to leave Chicago and go to New York or, you know, maybe L.A. or over to France? Did that ever kind of cross your mind and you think, no, I'm going to stay here in Chicago?
I've been to New York. I've been to L.A. I've been to France, but there's no place like Chicago. There's no place like home. And this is where my family is. I don't mind going. I would never want to live in New York. I'm sorry for those New Yorkers out there, but it's just not a place I would want to live. Yeah. I go there and visit. I have fun. I go to L.A., I go there to visit, have fun. I go to Paris, I go there to visit, have fun, but I come right back home. And when I fly over that skyline and see that skyline, I click my heels. There's no place like Chicago. And it doesn't matter where I've been or how exotic the place is, there's no place like Chicago.
Okay, key question. What was the first concert you saw, and what was the first time you thought, I think I want to make a living doing this?
Gosh, the very first concert I saw, I remember seeing, believe it or not, James Brown.
Oh, yes.
Good.
I saw James Brown at the Regal Theater, and I was in total awe. You know, I was just in awe of James Brown, the Godfather of Soul. He's also one of my influences. I tell you, I grew up on all types of music. And when I saw James Brown, I didn't have the idea of actually doing that. I was so in awe of what he was doing. But I tell you, I saw Sarah Vaughan at the Chicago Theater, and I was just taken aback by Sarah Vaughan. Unfortunately, I never saw Billie Holiday. I never saw her perform. Mm-hmm. I did see Nina Simone perform. I was also in awe, again, of Nina. Unfortunately, I never saw Ella Fitzgerald perform. But when I saw Sarah, and this is her centennial, by the way, celebrating 100 years of Sarah Vaughan, as well, this is Dinah Washington's 100 year, too. So I would be remiss not to mention these ladies, because they've all have been my inspiration. But when I saw Sarah Vaughan and how effortlessly she sang and how beautifully she sang, and she was working hard because her face was, she was dripping in perspiration. But everything looked so effortless. And I was just in awe of her live performance as well as listening to her records. But when you saw her in person, wow, was I there with my taking notes, pen and paper, taking notes, and just how she worked the audience, how she communicated with the band, and the beauty of her voice and her range, and also the art of storytelling. That's the thing that really was key for me, because I hung on to her every word, and it was like, to me, a great storyteller is an artist that has really lived life, an artist that has felt joy and pain. You know, you can't be a true artist unless you've lived. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
And you can tell, like, some of the young artists, they're living, but they haven't really gotten into the kit and caboodle of life yet.
So yeah.
Like Samara Joy. Are you familiar with Samara Joy?
No.
I know the name.
Oh, my God. You look her up. Samara
really?
Joy. She's a young 23-year-old young lady that's taken the music world by storm.
Oh.
And you can tell she's been inspired by Sarah and Billy and Betty Carter. But she's only 23 years old. She's got a great instrument. And I'd like to hear what she sounds like in about 10 years when she's lived life, she's got her heart broken, or she's broken someone's heart. You know? And that, you know, you can really convey your stories when you've lived. That's the art of storytelling, living.
Do you think that's a problem for some young artists, not only learning how to tell a story, but also bucking the labels and the managers that say, you need to do it this way, we want you to do it this way. And too many labels and managers don't encourage the natural talent that an artist has. They want to mold them into the 8x10 glossy of the week.
Yes, and that's very true. And that's why there are some great artists that, you know, it's the business.
Yeah.
It's a music business first.
Mm-hmm.
And the business of music is to sell records and to make money by any means necessary. And it's unfortunate. You know, I'm a veteran out here, so they know they can't mold me into something. And I believe, and I've even said this to some of the young artists, that no is a very powerful word.
Mm-hmm.
And as a female artist, you can say no and still be a lady, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's very, I've done it. I've done it several times. And, oh, Miss Alexander, well, we would like for you to do this, blah, blah, blah. And I'll say, oh, no, I don't, that's not for me. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll turn around and say to, like, my assistant, well, why is she being difficult? And she says, oh, she's not being difficult. She just knows what she wants.
Yes.
Yep.
It's like she knows what she doesn't want. And so, unfortunately, the young artists are so, they're so willing to, they just want to get there.
Yeah.
Wherever there is. And they'll do some unnecessary things to get there. And once they get there, they'll realize, wow, this is not really what I wanted, and I've made a mistake by getting to this place. So, but you learn that by living and by learning and by growing. So,
yeah.
And just like, you know, your mom could tell you, don't put your hand on the fire, you'll get burned. And you don't believe it, and you stick your hand in the fire anyway, and you go, oh, my God, she did try to tell me. You know, so some people have to find out things on their own. Most people do, as a matter of fact, and I'm a witness of that myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of moms, and you talked about the profound effect your mother and her love of music had on you.
Yeah.
A listener said one of her favorite CDs is Songs My Mother Loves. And I looked that up, and that was from 10 years ago. Is that still available if people want to get their hands on that?
Has it been that long?
I know.
Yeah, it's still available. You can stream it. It's on all of the platforms. It's still available.
Cool.
I wanted to pay tribute to my mom while I still had her.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I still have her. She's still alive. She's 88 years old. I'm sure she doesn't want anybody to know her age, but it's the number, right? Whatever.
Yes.
But she lives in Michigan, and she's doing very well. And I'm so grateful and so indebted to her for pointing me in this direction of this music. But, you know, she was concerned because she grew up during the time of Billy.
Yeah.
And she knew the type of life that Billy led, and she was concerned about me. I guess she was concerned that some guy was going to, like, string me out or whatever. And I simply said to her, well, you raised me. So, yeah.
Oh,
and
great comeback.
Yeah.
I love that.
I'm healthy. You know, I have two children. I have two sons, and I have granddaughters, and everybody's doing very well. So, yeah, here I am.
Yeah.
Thanks to my mom.
Yeah, that's great. And the show that you're doing on Wednesday night at 7:30 at the City Winery. And can I just say as an aside, we love the acoustics in the City Winery.
Oh, yeah.
Love the sight lines. It's a fabulous place to see live music.
You know what? It's going to be even better because we have the Metropolitan Jazz Octet has an engineer that works with them personally on the sound.
Good.
So the sound will be impeccable. I almost know that it will.
Absolutely.
So I'm looking forward to it.
It's Too Hot for Words, the music of Billie Holiday featuring Dee Alexander with the Metropolitan Jazz Octet. Listen, use us anytime you got any projects going on, because we are just blown away by your music, and I'm just tickled that you're still a Chicagoan.
And I will tell you in front, we're going to try and con you into spending some time in studio with us next time we talk.
You know what? I would absolutely love that. And let me tell you one other thing that I'm doing, as a matter of fact, and I just found out about it last week. I've been invited to, of all places, Vietnam.
Do
their first international jazz festival the week of April. I'll be gone from April 23rd through May 2nd. And their tourism, they're beefing up their tourism there. So it's their first international jazz festival, and I've been invited to go there with a gentleman by the name of Chico Freeman, who is the son of the great Bon Freeman, who was one of the stalwarts here in Chicago, saxophone players. And so I'm really looking forward to going there and having that experience, because I've never been to Vietnam. And I heard that we're going to be performing outside on the beach, and it's warm there, you know, it's summer. So I'm like, wow, I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be fantastic.
That is
cool. And I
only
have to do one show, one 45-minute show.
Wow.
I'm there.
Well, so you've got time to shop, too, once you're there, right?
Shop and sunning and swimming.
Yes. It's been so much fun talking to you, Dee. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you so much. And keep in contact with me.
We will.
I would love to come into the studio.
All right. We'll hold you to that this summer for sure. Thank you, Dee.
Absolutely. Sure.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
She is such a treasure.
She really is. And it's Too Hot for Words, the music of Billie Holiday featuring Dee Alexander. Wednesday night, 7:30. Doors open at 6 at the City Winery right here in Chicago.
This mood, can't get over this feeling, just can't get out of this mood. Last night your lips were too appealing, and the thrill should have been all gone by today in the usual way. But it's only your arms I'm out of, can't get out of this dream. What a fool to dream of you. 'Twasn't part of my scheme to sigh and tell you that I love you, but I'm saying it and I'm playing it dumb. Can't get out of this mood. Heartbreak, here I come.
Steve King, Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. It's Julian's 30th birthday, so that's another dealer's choice from Julian. And that was who and what?
That is Samara Joy,
as
mentioned by Dee Alexander, and that is Can't Get Out of This Mood.
Wow, she does sound older than 23. That is interesting. Is that from a CD that you've come across? And how do you spell her first name? Because I was trying to look her up, and obviously you had better luck than I did.
It's Samara, and that was from Linger a While from 2022.
Oh, wow.
And I know that I've seen her, or I've...
You probably have a CD by her.
No, I came across something by her within the past 2 months or so, and I thought, oh, that's interesting.
Name that Dee was recommending.
Yeah. Now that you mention it, so there's this new movie on Netflix called Shirley, and one of her songs is on that track.
Huh.
I wonder if that's where I came across it.
That might be it. The track is Why I'm Here.
Okay. Well, officially, happy birthday now. You were born 30 years ago by this time, right?
Yes. At this point, 30 years ago, I've been born for an hour and a half.
Well, thank you for sharing your birthday with us. As we lead into this unbelievable event that's going to happen on Monday, which led me to say, what in the world will we have to talk about after the eclipse on Monday? Well, there, everything else will pale, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely nothing at all to talk about. Not one single thing to talk about.
Unless, of course, you're aware of the cicada influx. You're going to be so tired.
Cicada-geddon.
You're going to be so tired of cicada-geddon by the time we get to cicadas. I'm already tired of them because I hate them. I'm the person that has been known to stand on our patio and shake my fist to the heavens and beg them to shut up because the sound just, it's like nails on a blackboard. You, on the other hand, are saying it's like white noise, which I don't understand. To me, it is.
I just kind of get used to it, and I think that's sort of the change of the seasons. But this year,
no,
it is going to be cicada-geddon.
It is truly going to be because of billions. Some scientists are saying possibly trillions of cicadas. They're already putting out the word to protect your dog because apparently dogs like to eat them.
And apparently there's some chemical in the cicada exoskeletons that is going to make a dog sick.
Just when you think you've heard all of the cicada stories, even before they come to town, it just got weird a couple of days ago.
Oh.
It really did get weird a couple of days ago, because now we're talking about zombie cicadas. Not just not just zombie cicadas, but horny zombie cicadas. I know.
He's only 30.
We're all adults, so I can. This is science I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
Julian, have you heard about this?
No. I knew about the cicadas.
Well, be afraid, because the red-eyed bugs are going to become red-eyed buggers that are really going to freak you out, because apparently science is now telling us that many of them will be carrying a sexually transmitted disease. You heard me right. Starting in about a month, the trillions, I know they're talking about billions and maybe trillions, but I'm going to say there will be trillions, because I may lose my mind by the time we get to the end of May, but do not touch that, Steve. Do not say anything. Are you ready to hear more about what's happening with these little devils?
Oh, sure. Horny cicadas.
Horny zombie cicadas.
Horny zombie cicadas.
Yes. The biggest threat to the insects, besides the birds and the mammals that eat them for snacks, is this sexually transmitted disease. It's a fungus that will turn the cicadas into zombies because their private parts will fall off. This is science.
Yeah, they're falling off.
This is science. It sounds more like science fiction, doesn't it? Apparently, the male cicada, the back end of him will... Hey.
Yeah?
I'm not talking to a 7-year-old. I'm talking to an adult. The back end of... this is very science fiction-y. The back end of the cicada becomes infected with this white fungus, and their gonads fall off. And when that happens, they become very sexually active, but nothing's happening because they don't have anything to... So they're very frustrated, and they're zombies.
Where did you find this?
You're going to be hearing all about this. The insects are sterilized. They're not killed. The fungus sterilizes them. That important part of their body falls off.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're red hot all over. They want... Hey, I'm trying to talk to you in real people terms.
Yeah.
They want some action. So what happens is they're spreading the fungus. I find this terrifying. I really do. Horny zombie cicadas. Once they arrive, one brood, the 13-year cicadas, and the other brood, the 17-year cicadas, will stick around through June. And science really does not know how this fungus is going to affect their numbers. And I'm not sure I want to find out.
There was a fungus among us. There was a rumble in the jungle. There was a static in the attic, a moaning and a groaning, a fungus among us. We had a fight in the middle of the night. There was a fungus among us.
Which one is the fungus? So, okay, read on.
Well, I forgot, again, the cicadas are stranger than fiction. I'm reminded that before we learned about this STD, this sexually transmitted disease that makes their important parts fall off, yet they become extremely hot and bothered, which means they end up spreading the STD. We had learned a couple of weeks ago that when they urinate even stronger than a human does. Now, think about that.
Do I have to?
You could be walking around.
I don't want to.
You could be walking around in your yard thinking that it's raining, but no.
Well, I was trying to enjoy my birthday cookies. There goes that plan.
Yeah.
I am trying to help you people. I'm reminding you, you don't want your dogs snacking on these crunchy critters.
Uh-huh.
And you do not want to be out when you think that it's, as a listener points out, you got to be careful. If you think it's raining, it could be cicadas peeing on you.
Uh-huh.
Because they pee with great strength. Again, this is science I'm talking about. Or science fiction. I know it's very strange. Let me read here. It says, these insects are the strongest urinators in the animal kingdom, with flows that put humans and elephants to shame. That's pretty impressive, if you ask me.
Julian, can I come over on your side of the glass?
They have pumps in their heads.
What?
That pull moisture from the roots of trees, allowing them to feed for more than a decade underground. What was God thinking? Really? When he made the cicada, what was he thinking? They are actually rescuers of caterpillars. Well, thank you for that. They're being ravaged by this sexually transmitted disease that has turned them into zombies. This, again, every time I read that, I go, oh, ew. Inside trees are sugary, nutrient-heavy saps that flow through tissues called phloem.
Phloem?
Phloem. Most insects love the sap, but not cicadas. They go for tissue, which carries mostly water and a bit of nutrients, and that's why they have this incredible ability to... Jeff, a strong stream.
This is the segment that we should submit to the broadcast awards.
Okay.
This is.
That's the last time I try to inform you people. This is going to be a very big deal. A month from now, you're going to say, I think I heard somewhere that you might think it's raining on you because it's springtime in Chicago. But in fact, it's cicadas that can pee stronger than a human or an elephant. And if you get a whole bunch of them together, it's going to be really weird.
I heard a blind man scream and say, now there goes a sight for my sore eyes. There goes a sight for my sore eyes.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. This text just in to 312-981-7200. 847 area code says, this is the first time we haven't wanted to fix a midnight snack during your Saturday night show. That's from Bob and Sherry in Arlington Heights.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I understand.
You kind of put the kibosh on my midnight hankerings because I am now fixated because...
Yeah.
Well, I have just learned, thanks to our smart audience, that the mating sound that they make is as loud as a motorcycle or a chainsaw. So when you hear that god-awful sound that makes me just crazy, do not err me. Do not err me.
I think all the evidence has been laid out over the past few minutes. I don't have to say anything.
That's their mating sound, and they got this very serious problem. They need to get addressed. All right, here
or get dressed.
Yes, some of the texts coming in. Entomologist Johnny, thank you for informing us. Thank you very much for recognizing my efforts. 773 area code.
I like this from the 630 area code. Think of the poor guy who had to measure the mile per hour and output.
You want me to do what now? pool owner Don in Kalamazoo said, now I'm worried. 414 area code said, so what are we to do? Wear earplugs and a wide brim hat? Yeah, and be sure it's a waterproof wide brim hat.
As Spike Odell said for years, you don't get this kind of radio up and down the dial.
Yep, this is true. And a listener said, now I'm longing for the eclipse. We've gone on to cicadas. I'm right there with you. At least the eclipse is quiet, unless you happen to be stuck in traffic. But trust me, this is not going to go away. The peeing, horny, zombie cicadas are here to stay in the quadrillions. That's the latest number that I hear. And we're going to have an environmental educator on the show.
In a few weeks.
In a few weeks, just before this whole thing erupts.
Yep.
Yep.
We are your source for zombie cicada updates.
And I'm beginning to think that the people that are in that apartment straight across from us that just started flashing their lights at us, I think they're listening.
You think?
Because they want me to look at them. I know they do. They want to show me a little cicada action. And I'm not looking over there.
We'll take a break. More coming up at WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Hey, hey, old bean, and you too, baby.
I feel like I'm at the roller skating rink. That's what I love about this. I'm just kind of swaying back and forth.
That's because you're digging Tom's Tunes.
That's right. It's time now for our car guy, Tom Appel.
Publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. And this week's edition of Tom's Tunes. The subject matter is what, Thomas?
My Blue Heaven, a jazz staple. A jazz staple played thousands of times by different jazz artists. And I picked four of my favorite versions. That should have been Benny Carter playing My Blue Heaven there. The song goes way back to the mid-20s, but covered a lot in the 50s.
I love that. That was just, again, with my headphones on, I'm just kind of grooving left to right. My feet were going just like I was at the rink, skating around. You know? How are you, Thomas?
I'm well, thank you.
Good, good. I'm sorry that you have to follow the conversation about the horny cicadas.
The zombie cicadas.
Yes. A listener wants to know, when we are overwhelmed by the zillions and trillions of cicadas, will that be an auto problem? Do you know if cicada droppings, because they are big peers, if that's going to affect the paint on our car? That's seriously a question that a listener is
asking. That's actually a reasonable question.
Yes.
Paint coatings are so good these days, probably not an issue.
Okay, but before we jump to that conclusion, I will share with you, this was probably a good,
15, 20
years ago. We were road testing a car. Car was parked out in front of our house, And it was the season where the birds were eating some of the
berries.
Some of the berries, and then there were berry droppings that found their way to the car, and we heard from the people that had delivered the car they had to have a portion of the car repainted.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that is not normally the case. I guess I've heard of extreme cases of that, and I think we all remember going back to the late 70s, early 80s, when we used to talk about acid rain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which used to do a number on paint finishes, but all cars are covered with a coating, usually urethane now, that is impervious to most things. And the paint itself is never actually exposed to the atmosphere.
See,
so what happened to you guys means that the coating itself was damaged.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Because obviously we have radioactive birds in our neighborhood,
yeah.
And they were just... I was horrified when we found that out, because we had done our best to clean the car, obviously,
right.
Before it was picked up, and had no idea, and apparently that the top coating was affected. So, seriously, we need to look into the cicada urine and be sure that that's not a problem.
But let me stay with car coatings for a second, because probably as of when we purchased our new car about a year or so ago, we've been hearing more and more about, I'm forgetting, what is the term for where they do a coating over your car?
Oh, ceramic coating.
Ceramic coating. That's becoming a thing. What do you know about that, Tom?
I don't know that much about it. And I think that most people think that that's not necessary. But again, you guys ran into a situation where it would have been helpful. The coating itself that's on most cars right now is very resilient. And I recently had a car exposed to extreme hail. And we all saw the hail a few weeks ago. Yeah, and that was outside for the worst of it, and beautifully, wonderfully, the urethane coating actually has enough of a reflex to it, enough give that there was no permanent damage, which
really?
Is shocking.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I want to put anything over that.
Huh.
Because I've been surprised at the number of people in various groups that I follow on Facebook that are deciding to do the ceramic coating.
And it's not inexpensive.
No, not at all.
And I remember the first time I heard about this, I thought this harkens back to the days of undercoating. Remember how that used to be a big thing? Oh, you've got to pay extra or else your car is going to turn into a rusty heap.
And I guess the reason a lot of people are doing it, because it really does make your car look very shiny.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
well, that's its own value. and I love a shiny car, so that's got real dollar value.
Yeah. Yes. But you remember that whole undercoating nonsense?
Yeah.
Yeah. I sold undercoating to people.
Did you? Oh, geez.
Okay. Yeah. This is the underside, the underbelly of Tom Appel's history. You were a used car dealer.
Yeah, my time in purgatory was extended by that, and but I did sell undercoating to some people, and it was completely unnecessary.
But nowadays, when you see a car that has rust on it, and it is a car that's within the past 20 years, it's really weird. Because you just
it's
don't.
Startling.
Yeah, you don't see that anymore, and you wonder, well, what in the world happened to that vehicle to cause that wheel well to rust out?
So in most cases, what would be the cause? A manufacturer problem or too much salt in a Chicago winter or what?
You know, usually it is specific to a car model, and there was some flaw in the manufacturing.
Mm.
If you look at, like, Acuras from the late 80s, for example, there are some Acura models, for whatever reason, they rust over the rear wheel wells. And who knows if the liner of the wheel well itself wasn't complete or if water got in there and got trapped. But there are certain models that just are prone to rust. If you look at very old Mercedes-Benz products from the 70s and the 80s, you'll see rust in the exact same places. And it's bubbling under the paint, and it never seems to come through. But the later versions. Now, there are some weird things where the paint wasn't good or something happened to the primer. But it's pretty darn rare. And it's funny that we look at a car now that we think is 5 or 10 years old, and it's 30 years old.
Yeah.
Because, again, they don't seem to rust anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I'm reminded of a car that we had 20-something years ago, and there was rusty residue on the back wheels, and the service writer said, well, you need to start putting your car in reverse and driving it in reverse so you can knock that rust off. And I thought,
what?
Really? Yeah,
I think I've never heard that.
Yeah, this had to do with the rotors, so the rotors on the rear wheels.
Yeah.
Oh.
And they said, well, you just need to, you know, get in a parking lot and drive in reverse.
Yeah, back up and put your brakes on more often.
Yeah.
And it supposedly kind of shakes some of that stuff off.
Yeah, and we said, okay, fine, we can do that.
Well, and also there are times when, like in 2 weeks, we're going to be heading down to Florida. When we go down there, the car that we have there is parked, and it's parked in a carport. And usually for about the first, I want to say 3 or 4 days, we will hear a little bit of squeaking or something before we drive it for a few miles. And then eventually it goes away. So what is that? Is that now we're right off the Gulf, so there's a lot of salt air down there.
Mm-hmm.
The rotors themselves, the brake rotors themselves are steel. And the steel compound between different rotors on different cars changes. But your rotors will rust because you're always scrubbing them. That's how you stop. And little bits of steel just get trapped in the grooves that eventually form in the wheel. And that rust will go away. But it's there. It's on the surface. And you want to be careful. If your car, like the car you're talking about, has been parked for a while, mm-hmm. you want to be careful hitting the brakes because your braking effectiveness will be slightly compromised by that. But it wears away. It's not damaging. It's not permanent. And it's a fairly normal thing. I had a 1999 Nissan Maxima that did that all the time. I mean, if it was humid out, the wheels would rust over. It was very strange.
Hmm.
The rotors would.
So when you say you want to be careful, you mean the first couple of days we drive it, gently brake as opposed to slamming on the brakes, or what?
I'm actually thinking the first few minutes. You just want to get that sort of crust of rust off of there. Mm-hmm. It's going to squeak for a while, but the heavy stuff's going to come off right away the first time you brake.
Okay. Well, a listener is reminded of Hello, Rusty Jones. Goodbye, Rusty Car.
Yeah.
Remember that. Tom Appel is with us. We're talking cars. If you've got something to say, you can text us at 312-981-7200. And that's the number you can call as well. We do cars with Tom a couple times a month, and we will continue right here on WGN.
King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking with the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, Tom Appel, and you're digging Tom's tunes. And the theme tonight is different versions of My Blue Heaven. And Tom, this is who?
This is drummer Joe Jones, who is a drummer and a band leader. And I really like this version of the tune.
I dug up a couple versions that we may lay on you a little later.
Ooh.
That I don't know if you're familiar with them or not, but just some that I thought might be interesting to throw in.
Cool.
And I was trying to think of, my dad was a fan of the guy who originally had the first million-selling record. Do you know what the first million-selling record was?
Man, I should know this, and it's not going to come to me.
The first million-selling record was My Blue Heaven.
I did not know that.
Back in 1927 by Gene Austin.
It was featured in the movie The Ziegfeld Follies, and then it just took off. Yeah. Everything you ever wanted to know about My Blue Heaven.
There's a whole bunch of stuff that we want to get to with Tom, but the blatant plug light has just gone on, so people should follow you where, and what's new at Consumer Guide?
Yeah, I'm easy to follow on Twitter. I'm Car Guy Tom on Twitter. I usually post everything that's been going on at Consumer Guide there. But just check us out at consumerguide.com. You can go to the blog, see what's going on there. And you can also listen to our podcasts right there if you want to stream them. Or you can listen to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff podcast anywhere. You can download it. It's available anywhere where you get podcasts. And this week we're talking recalls.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the endless Takata airbag recall.
Amazing.
Which is still going on. There's a new Ford recall.
This has been going. This started how many years ago? Are we getting close to a decade?
It's more than. It's unbelievably. The first recall was 2001.
Really?
Yeah, we didn't know what it was yet, but this was an Isuzu. When Isuzu was still selling cars in the U.S., it was an Isuzu recall for the airbags, and no one yet knew the scope of the damage.
Wow, and that was Takata.
That was Takata, yeah.
Because I think we've had our Takata airbags replaced on at least two cars in the past. Yeah. Wow. And you said that the latest is on Fords?
It's a Ford recall now, and it is for older vehicles.
Okay.
It's for older vehicles, and they're just recognizing that the problem is there. No one ever seems to have an idea of what the full scope of the problem is.
Yeah.
And for people who don't know, Takata is gone. It was propped up for a number of years by the manufacturers whom Takata had supplied because they needed someone to continue to make these these airbags for the recall. So now any of the recalls that are still out there that may happen will be replaced with good airbags. As we know, they did replace good airbags or bad airbags with bad airbags because they didn't have a fix yet.
Yeah.
So it was all just so crazy. And the millions and millions and millions of cars involved, I think we're all collectively very tired of the story.
Okay. So for the people that are replacing Takata airbags, are now individual manufacturers manufacturing their own airbags, or is there a big company that is now doing airbags for most manufacturers as Takata had been doing?
I think the replacement bags are being farmed out to different suppliers now. I don't think there's one single supplier. For a long time, Takata had been propped up by money from manufacturers because they went broke because of the recalls. And it was one company building replacement airbags for a while.
But I know for some time, General Motors was pretty much unaffected by that because they had a completely different supplier, maybe in-house for their airbags, right?
Yeah, GM was sort of isolated, and Fiat Chrysler, Daimler Chrysler was isolated as well. They had used different suppliers. But almost all the Japanese makers and Ford, and to some extent, I believe BMW and Mercedes were affected by this.
So if you are driving an older Ford and you're listening and you hear that there might be a Takata airbag problem, but maybe you bought this car from Joe down the street and the likelihood of the dealership contacting you or the manufacturer is slim, do you just go to the NHTSA website and then you put in your VIN number and find out if there is a recall for your vehicle? Is that the simplest thing to do?
That is the simplest thing to do, yeah. Because as we're now talking about third and fourth generation owners of vehicles, it is more difficult for a manufacturer to find people. Now, that said, if you bought a car from a dealership is required to bring a vehicle up to recall standard.
Really?
Yeah, so you should be in good shape with that. But you want to ask your dealership just to be sure. And I think that in the case of Takata, there were some exceptions because there weren't fixes yet.
Mm-hmm.
But they should notify you of that then.
Are there any other major recalls that we should know about right now?
I'm looking at one, Tom, for VW recalling 260,000 vehicles over a fuel tank defect.
I didn't see that one today. That's interesting. I went down a whole bunch of calls today. The most interesting one I saw is that Fisker is being, this is Fisker, the EV startup company, is currently under scrutiny for five separate issues.
What?
Don't buy a Fisker. I hate to say that. But, I think that's a company that's just going to have to go away.
Really? Okay,
yeah.
Let me hold you on that. Why?
Fisker started selling cars last year, and they're the product of Hendrik Fisker and his startup company, and everyone was rooting for this guy because he was a designer, and he did great work with BMW and then with Ford and started his own company, and it failed back in 2011 with the Fisker Karma. So he started an EV startup, and he had a lot of really interesting ways to run a company that were going to be different and perhaps require less money, but the first 5,000 vehicles he sold, he's built 10,000 now, have been deeply flawed. There's problems with the software, there's problems with the braking, there's quality control issues. And unfortunately, these problems have plagued the company. He hasn't been able to find an audience for these vehicles. But the software issue is the big deal. If this company is indeed on the bubble, and it seems like it is, you don't want to buy a car with software issues, especially an electric car, because no one is going to fix these issues for you later.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be buying a 5,500-pound paperweight because
wow.
No one's going to be able to fix that car.
It's a shame because looking at the styling of the vehicles, there were interesting looking vehicles.
Yeah, it's a terrible shame, and I was rooting for this, and I wanted this to happen, but the reality is that they're not able to do this. Now, here's the interesting part of the story. This week, Fisker, to raise cash, because they're in deep, deep, deep trouble financially, and they've issued that announcement where they suggest that they may not be an ongoing concern, has started selling the remainder of its inventory, about 5,000 vehicles, at 40% off list price.
Mm.
So it's $62,000 vehicles are going for about $39,000, and its cheapest vehicles are now $25,000 for an EV, which sounds like an awesome deal, but it's a terrible gamble.
Hmm. Have you driven or been in a Fisker?
I have not. I know people who have, and they have not been entirely pleased. They suggested that it's not a completely sorted vehicle yet.
Interesting. What a story that is, too, because obviously, to get it to the point of manufacturing a car, a whole lot of money went into that.
It did, and their business plan was super interesting, too. They were doing something they called asset light, or capital light, where they were not going to own the factory. They were paying another company to build the vehicles for them. And this is going to give them a certain amount of flexibility. They weren't going to have to invest in property or manufacturing, and they would turn the manufacturing over to a company that was really good at it. In this case, a company called Magna, a huge automotive supplier out of Canada. And word was that the quality control is pretty good on the vehicles being built by Magna, so it seemed like this was a good plan. But I think that it's also very expensive to build a vehicle this way. You don't have to come up with the capital up front, but your revenues are going to be compromised by the fact that you're paying someone else to build your vehicle. And I think that they just never generated the kind of money they needed to stay in business.
Hmm. We're talking cars with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide. More coming up. Stay with us at WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Tom Appel had picked the subject of... let that play for a little bit, Julian. Of My Blue Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom, what's your best guess who this is?
Dwayne Eddy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to hear what he does here in a second.
Okay. I'm loving this.
Okay, you think you've heard all of Dwayne's low tones? Listen
right
to this.
That's awesome.
I just like the barking women in the background.
That is one of my all-time favorite versions of that, and I know that wasn't part of... the Tom's Tunes group, but I had to throw that in. Mm-hmm. Had you ever heard that, Tom?
I have not. I have not. So that was a treat. No, that was awesome.
Well, you get points, though, for guessing that it was, in fact, the guy with the twangy guitar, Dwayne Eddy.
We're talking with Tom Appel. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Again, go to consumerguide.com. You will find best buys. You will find road tests and all kinds of stuff. Speaking of which, what are you driving and what do you think of it?
Oh, I'm glad you're asking me this, because I'm driving something kind of exciting right now. General Motors updated its big pickups for 2024. That's the Sierra and the Silverado. And I'm driving the 2024 Sierra in AT4X trim. That is the luxury version of their off-road version. It's kind of confusing. And if you guess it's expensive, you're right. It's about $88,000. But the this is very interesting. So I'm driving this great luxury off-road ready pickup truck that comes with a light-duty diesel. And GM is the last company still putting a light-duty diesel in its big pickups. Ford and Ram backed away from that. But this engine is really, really refined and worth the extra money. I'm getting 22 miles per gallon. The power is excellent. I can't tell that it's a diesel if I have the music on at all. I'm very impressed. And the new nicer GM interiors, there is a cabin war going on in the big pickup truck industry, and Ford and Ram have really stepped up their game, and GM was kind of dragging. This is a nice interior.
Really?
these are absolutely luxury vehicles now.
Is this also like a moving office? If you know you're in the business where you need a yes. pickup truck, but you also need the convenience of office space.
Yeah, it's very much like that. It's a beautiful interior. There's all sorts of space. You can fold things flat, so you can set up a laptop. It's really spectacular, and I'm just impressed by how nicely it rides as well. And sort of what's happening when you have these trucks with the off-road stuff is you get more sidewall on the tires because you need that kind of cushioning for off-road work. That sort of pays off with better ride comfort. So best of both worlds.
I want to take you to a story that just surfaced about a week or so ago. What's the deal with Toyota buying out Panasonic?
That is a great question, and I'm not seeing an awful lot of coverage of the reason for this. But long story short, Toyota is one of those companies that other companies like to do business with. Historically, when they do these surveys of suppliers to the auto industry, Toyota is always the company that other companies want to work with. They're reasonable to work with. They seem to pay what people ask, and they're very good about being on time. And all this stuff pays off. And Toyota's had this relationship with Panasonic that goes way back to 1996, or the beginning of their hybrid vehicles. The Prius, for example, needed batteries that Panasonic built. So for all this time, Panasonic has been supplying Toyota in a joint venture with vehicles for hybrids and plug-in hybrid vehicles. But now Toyota has taken over the relationship, and no one seems to know exactly why. But Toyota has bought Panasonic out, and they are Panasonic. This particular relationship is starting to build batteries for EVs, so lithium-ion batteries, and everyone's going to need EV batteries as we move forward. But it's not 100% clear why suddenly Toyota wanted full control of the company.
So has Toyota bought out all of Panasonic, or just the division that has been producing these batteries?
It was a relationship called Prime Earth EV Energy, and that was a joint venture between Panasonic and Toyota. And sometime back in 2010, Toyota took a larger stake in this operation. I think it up to 60%, something like that. And then now they're taking it all over.
So it doesn't look like Toyota's going to be making TVs, for example, right? I mean, if you have a Panasonic TV.
This is strictly a battery.
This is okay. Yeah, this is for your electric vehicles and your hybrid vehicles, and I think you called it Prime Earth. That's one word, Prime Earth EV Energy Company.
Yes, and this was designed specifically for the creation of batteries for Toyota. Yeah, there's all sorts of Panasonic that mm-hmm. is still out there.
So a listener asks if you foresee the range improving greatly on electric vehicles.
Not greatly, but improving. And it seems to improve a little bit every year. And the improvements come from two places. They come from improved battery chemistry, and then the handling of the battery, in terms of temperature and things like that. And then just software. Mm-hmm. It's funny how much like the manufacturer will launch a vehicle, and 1 year later, all of a sudden, its range has improved 8 to 10%. And this is just because they understand how to handle the battery and the power control systems better. And that comes from software development. So we're seeing everything go up a little bit every year, which is exciting.
And that's really the case, regardless of what is propelling the car, whether it is gasoline or battery power or whatever. There are incremental increases in the range.
Yeah, funny you should mention that, Steve. I was just talking to, on the podcast, I was talking to someone from Nissan about their small vehicles, the Versa and the Kicks and the Sentra, all of which use a CVT, which is a continuously variable transmission. And they made huge gains by improving that mechanically, but also in the software management of the CVT itself. And that improved fuel economy a lot, surprisingly.
By the way, I want to sidestep to something that Johnny and I were talking about as we were driving in tonight. We were, probably because of the time we're coming in, and it's just that time, we're coming in a little earlier, and the sun is staying up a little later, and the sun is just going down, and lights are coming on, and we were blinded by I don't know how many headlights on different vehicles tonight. And I know we've talked about this before, but what is the industry's response at the moment to the problem, and it is a very real problem, of some of these newly designed headlights just glaring and almost blinding you when you're coming up on a car from the opposite direction.
I have not heard an official response from anyone in the industry. And I remember that when the problem first began with xenon headlights, mm-hmm. a lot of which were misaimed, and that was a very bright white light too, very much like LEDs. It was the same phenomenon, although there was some blue to that. And if they were in any way misaligned, they blinded people. And it became an issue that the police took upon themselves to correct, which was very weird and very strange, because if you bought a car from a factory, you expect it to be compliant with all, you know, laws, and eventually that made its way up, and there was a lot that was done formally. I don't think there was any laws ever established, but they were more careful to aim the headlights and to make sure that the high beams weren't going on automatically at the wrong times. So I don't know if there were any single fixes that corrected everything, but that's what's going to have to happen here. And I think we talked the last time I was on a little bit how with right. LED headlights, they can actually turn off certain elements of the light mm-hmm. to prevent people from being blinded. Clearly, that's not on every car yet, and we assume that's effective on the cars that's on.
We had an odd thing tonight because we had the problem with the headlights on a car behind us.
Yeah.
And they were... it was
high enough.
Almost a bluish tint to the light, but it was high enough that it was hitting me right in the rearview mirror, and Johnny was getting it right in the side mirrors, and it was really distracting both of us.
I mean, we were bathed in light. I mean, that's how bright it was from this higher vehicle going right through the cabin of our car. And when he finally pulled around us, I was like, yay, I can now open my eyes. And Steve said the same thing, and he was driving, so.
My impression is when that happens, the worst-case scenarios, it's a full-size pickup truck, and they have their high beams on. And it's absolutely devastating if you're in front of them.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a sport utility, and it looked like a newer one. And I thought, wow, that's really powerful stuff. We're going to take a quick break, Tom, and come back. A listener wants to know if you'll take a few minutes and talk a little bit about what you thought about the Ford Mustang. And I think I saw some pretty cool pictures you put up of that Ford Mustang, the Mach-E Premium. Yeah. Tom Appella is our guest. Stay with us here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide. And the theme tonight is different versions of My Blue Heaven. And that is who and what?
That is Bob Crosby. That is Bing Crosby's kid brother and his orchestra from way back in 1938. And if I chase this down right, that was live at the Rainbow Room. That's where that was recorded.
That was I love Bob Crosby's stuff. He had a very good orchestra.
And what a great recording.
Yeah.
Again, a few years ago. A listener also reminds us that this music is from one of this person's favorite movies, My Blue Heaven, with Steve Martin, Joan Cusack, and Rick Moranis. Mm-hmm. I forgot all about that. So that's our theme tonight, Tom's Tunes. Another listener, and again, they're texting us at 312-981-7200, says, could Tom talk a little bit about this Ford Mustang Mach-E? And you did test drive that, didn't you, Tom?
Yeah, my review just went up, so they must have seen that on Facebook. But I recently drove the Ford Mustang Mach-E Premium with a long-range battery and all-wheel drive. So that's about as much Mustang as you can do, Mustang Mach-E, unless you go to the GT. So this is an all-electric vehicle, dual motor. And for people who have seen this, it's supposed to be a crossover. And it is arguably not a crossover. It's relatively low. It's more of a hatchback sedan, but it doesn't matter what you call it. It's a very pleasant vehicle, and it's surprisingly roomy. I spent a week with the vehicle, and my only real disappointment, I'll get this out of the way first, was when it got cold, the range really fell. Hmm. And it seemed like me turning on the heat, which was something I was absolutely going to do under the conditions, lopped about 100 miles off my range.
Really? Now, was that,
that was disappointing.
Was that because of the kind of battery they're using, or just EVs in general, cold weather, you turn on the heat, you're going to lose the range?
Yeah, the latter. It was one of those situations. And I think that the range was intentionally a little pessimistic. So when I had established the fact that I was going to be using the heat and I was driving at night, which meant I was using the headlights and I was using the seat heaters, so I was doing all the stuff that was bad for the battery. And that knocked about 40% off the range, about 35% off the range, which was disappointing. But the range is pretty good to start with. It starts at 290 miles, so you still had some flexibility.
And what's the horsepower for that?
It's a bunch. It's a bunch. It's 346 horsepower.
Wow.
It's very quick, 0 to 60 in about 4 seconds. The thing about EV horsepower is that it never tells you the full story. There is no delay when you press the accelerator. Hmm. I don't want to call it the throttle, but I guess that's still the right word. When you press down on the pedal, the power shows up immediately. So it's quicker than the horsepower numbers suggest.
I remember when you first put up some pictures of the vehicle when you were road testing it. And one of the things I recall were the responses from people saying, well, that's not a Mustang. Why are they calling that a Mustang? Looks nothing like a Mustang. Am I right?
Yeah, and then that controversy is not going to go away anytime soon. Ford called it a Mustang. And during the We All Love EVs pre-COVID era excitement about Ford bringing out electric vehicles, the Mustang thing played really well. People loved it, or they talked about it, and they hated it, but that was more media. So it was really good. The vehicle got an awful lot of love and hate right away, so really good exposure.
And there were a lot of people concerned about, well, this isn't a Mustang, and then they're not going to be doing the old Mustang, but actually you have the best of both worlds. You have this, and you have the Mustang that people know and love with an ICE engine. And really, they were just kind of taking the Mustang name to get attention to this EV. Am I correct?
Yeah, and it may or may not have been a mistake in the long term, but it got a lot of attention for the vehicle right away. Yeah, and the old school Mustang's not going away. Now, that will eventually go electric. But right now, I just drove, actually, last week. I drove the 2024 Mustang GT, and it is still a spectacularly good little pony car. And it's everything that it should be.
And it still doesn't have a back seat, right? A legitimate back seat.
No, my wife complained about that. I forced my wife in the back seat to take pictures for me.
Oh.
That's the only place to get a good angle to take a dashboard shot.
I'm sorry, Tom. With all due respect, that's spousal abuse.
Yes.
That's what she says.
So tell us a little bit more about the Mustang Mach-E. What did you like about it? Well, what was it? You get in the car. What does it feel like? What does it look like? What was that experience?
I generally like the vehicle a lot. And the interior, you know, especially in the front row, is very spacious. The second row could be roomier, but it's pretty roomy. You could get middle-sized adults in there, no problem. What I really like about the interior is what I think a lot of people like about Teslas, though it's not as extreme, very clean. Most of the functionality, most of the stuff you need to do takes place on a vertically oriented, very large touchscreen, and that works very well. It's surprisingly how quick you get used to it, and it's responsive, and the icons are big, so if you think you wouldn't like a touchscreen this big, you might be wrong. And obviously, we always suggest long test drives, and this is one of the reasons.
It looks like
power is great.
It looks like an iPad sitting up there in the middle of the dash.
It does, and you know, many manufacturers have decided that trying to incorporate a 12, 13, 14-inch screen into the dash isn't going to happen. So the alternative is to make it look like an iPad attached to the dash. And that works or doesn't work for some people. I think it's fine, actually, because trying to build a dashboard around that would be very difficult.
Yeah, and I'm seeing the picture that Jill, your wife, took from the back seat. Great picture, because you are absolutely right. That is one sleek, clean dashboard with an iPad sitting up in the middle. And if you're accustomed to that, I think part of the thinking is people won't be averse to it because they're kind of accustomed to that sight.
Yeah, and what I like, too, is that knob that you can see at the bottom of the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is a rotary volume knob, a thing that I love.
Yeah.
I automatically give a car a letter grade higher because of that.
These are the important things, right?
Yeah.
You were going to say that you also like the power in general. Overall, I'm hearing you say and looking at your review that it's a thumbs up.
It's a thumbs up. And the thing, too, if you're thinking about a Mustang Mach-E or any electric vehicle, things that are going to change during this model year will be the federal tax credits for these vehicles. Right now, the Mach-E qualifies for $3,750. When they get their battery situation straightened out, which could be any day now, that will rise to $7,500. So you want to keep your ear to the ground about that.
And the vehicle that you tested, price as tested, was $67,575, right?
Yep, a lot of money. Some of that money is the all-wheel drive, because all-wheel drive costs more on electric vehicles because they have to add a separate motor to a new axle. That adds to the price. This has got the long-range battery, which adds a lot to the price. And then additionally, the other thing that adds to the price is going with this trim level. So you could do this vehicle for closer to $50,000 and then still knock off the tax incentive and be in a reasonably affordable vehicle.
Okay.
Well, we're going to take a break. Can you hang with us for a couple minutes?
I would love to.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Tom.
And when we get back, one of the things I'd like to get into, and I know we've talked about this before, but we've had some more texts and emails about it. Instead of the $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 price range, what are some of the most accessible from a price point vehicles that are out there on the market right now? More of that coming up. Stay with us at WGN.
Just Molly and me, and the baby makes three. Be happy in my blue hairball.
Steve King and Johnny Putnam at WGN Radio. We're talking with the publisher of Consumer Guide, Tom Appel, and Tom's tunes theme for tonight was different versions of My Blue Heaven. Tom, you'll never guess who that was.
Oh, no, now you got me in a bad place. I'm assuming it's Fats Domino.
Yes, it is.
You're not going to tell me you've never heard that before.
I have heard that. I'm a big fan, big Fats fan.
Yeah, one of the best concerts we ever saw was, years ago out at the Star Plaza Theater. Fats Domino and Jerry Lee Lewis were doing a tour together.
And when Fats stood up and bumped the piano across the stage with his belly.
Literally.
He had a belly of steel. I mean, it was a big piano that he was bumping. And then we got on the elevator with his crew. And they were all going to his room where he was making red beans and rice.
And as we got up to the floor and the elevator door opened and we could smell the red beans and rice. He had a hot plate
in his room at the Star Plaza, which I thought was so cool. Probably not legal, but, you know, you're going to tell Fats that.
And one of the few disappointments that I've had, I've had an even number, but one that stands out was years ago working at the Once Big 89, and that was in the Stone Container Building, and the basement or the first floor of the Stone Container Building as you walked in, the London House was there, and there were any of a number of acts who would be performing at the London House: Ramsey Lewis, Steve Allen, any of a number of people, and Fats Domino was performing there one week. So I'm walking in and I hear Fats Domino is there. So I get off the air at 2 in the morning, walk down and go into the London House. And Fats is there and he's sitting at the bar. And I went up and introduced myself. And I said, you know, I'd love to interview you. And he said, come on up to my hotel room this Thursday at about 1 o'clock. And I thought he was just being nice. Plus, I was working overnights. And one in the afternoon was a bit of a stretch, and I didn't go, and shame on me, I should have.
Heard this.
Yeah.
That was like one of your boneheaded moves.
Yeah, it was a really boneheaded move.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, Tom, staying with us for just a few more minutes. A listener said, you piqued my interest about that Ford Mustang. Is it electric, hybrid, or gas?
If I didn't say that, it's pure electric.
Pure electric. Okay. And we had mentioned briefly when we talked about some of the recalls, and it's a topic that you cover on your podcast this week, but I had said that there was this recall for like thousands of VWs, and we just kind of moved on. So let's go back to that, because we did not explain something like 200,000 vehicles, right?
Yeah, huge recall, 250,000 cars. And I'm looking at this list of vehicles. I should have looked at this harder earlier. These are all Volkswagen products powered by the 2-liter turbocharged engine.
Oh.
And they're all versions of the Golf, so that architecture. So the Audi A3 and versions of the Audi A3, the Volkswagen Jetta, the Golf Sportwagon, which was really a Jetta wagon, and the Golf itself and the Golf GTI. The issue here is a fuel tank intake issue with the fuel pump that is apparently supplying the charcoal canister, which filters the fuel, and makes sure that the vapor goes back into the fuel tank and not into the atmosphere. The charcoal canister is prone to leak, which means that some gas can get out, which makes it a fire hazard.
Hmm.
But again,
as well as an emissions nightmare.
Yeah.
I will come back to what we have talked about before. So the recall notification is now, but when is the average Gulf owner going to be able to take their vehicle in and have it fixed? How many months is that going to be that they're going to have to worry about this?
I don't have that date in front of me. It's typically 60 days, and I did find out why there's this long, long delay. And it's interesting. The government encourages manufacturers to make people aware of the problem immediately. And in doing so, they often overstate the scope, to be on the safe side, the scope of the actual issue. So not all of these vehicles are likely actually involved, because they probably know which products were or which elements of the system are bad. But they're going to get to that. But it takes them a while to find a fix and allow people to start scheduling dates with the dealer. So there is a very long wrap-up time between the announcement that we're discussing now and when they're going to start notifying owners.
Is there also some potential litigation protection here? If somebody has a problem, can Volkswagen or whoever the manufacturer is say, well, we told you?
I don't know. That's a good question, and that's something I need to look into. I don't know the answer to that, but it feels like maybe there is a little bit of what we used to refer to as CYA there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's the technical term, CYA.
Yes. Yes. That's a technical term, yeah.
Okay.
An industry insider term.
Before we let you out of here, I've got to share with you guys something that I learned this week, and this may be old news to you.
Now, does this have to do with zombie cicadas?
No, it does not have to do with zombie cicadas. That was important radio, Steve. That was informative, and that was science, not science fiction.
Okay.
Horny, dying, zombie cicadas.
Somebody who's just waking up right now, I wonder, what the heck?
And Tom, they can pee stronger than an elephant. Can you believe that?
I can now.
Because I wouldn't lie to you. So that takes me to this piece of information that I learned. The difference between a car that you drive today, a new car, something that's built in the last 10 years, and a car from, say, 50 years ago, one of the big differences is you cannot comfortably drive that car at highway speeds with one of the windows rolled down. Did you guys know that? A car from 1964... And who listening now that grew up in the 60s didn't grow up with a parent that smoked in the front seat and you were hanging your head out the back window to get some fresh air? But it didn't hurt anybody that window was down. I just learned this. It's called the Helmholtz resonance phenomenon.
The helm, you say?
The Helmholtz resonance phenomenon. Hermann von Helmholtz.
Who was a zombie cicada.
It sounds like it's right out of a Young Frankenstein. Hermann von Helmholtz literally has discovered that, similar to blowing into an empty bottle, that sound that you hear, in a vehicle that's been built in the last 20 years, when one window is rolled down, we actually feel that. Inside of us, we feel it, and it feels so uncomfortable that we do not like the window roll down.
Okay, could I speculate something here?
Go ahead.
One of the other problems, and Tom, feel free to jump in.
All right.
As vehicles have become more aerodynamic, as they have lost their vent windows, which allowed you to roll down the driver's window, but open the vent window, which would kind of deflect the wind away. And
it causes a vortex at the opening that causes the air inside the vessel or a bottle, if you're blowing into an empty bottle, to compress and decompress rapidly so that we actually feel it in our chest. And it feels so uncomfortable. We don't know what we're feeling, but we know that there's something wrong when that window, that one window is rolled down. I had Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. To Steve's point about the aerodynamics, for some reason, my family acquired four different sunbirds in the mid-80s.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, so were we, as it turned out. But one of the things that we learned with those vehicles, that was the first time we experienced that horrible vacuum effect. And we'd be driving along, and someone would roll down a window, and usually the driver. And the driver didn't feel it, but everyone else in the car would start screaming about the horrible, weird changes in pressure in the vehicle.
Yeah.
And it was intense, but those were fairly aerodynamic vehicles, and really aerodynamic compared to the generation of vehicles that they replaced. And I think that that was the key factor.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the difference, Ms. Science? You roll down the window, or you roll back the sunroof. Air coming into the cabin. What's the difference?
I don't know.
I've had that happen with the sunroof, actually, in the same cars when there was just a very small. These were pop-up sunroofs in those days. They didn't slide back. They just popped up. And if you would have to open the back window slightly to make that work.
Yes.
Otherwise, you would get the same effect.
So you could get the circulation.
In those cars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So could you mitigate this if the driver rolls down their window and if the right side rear seat passenger rolled down their window, would you create an airflow that would mitigate that problem?
I didn't study that part of this, the Helmholtz.
As I recall, some additional opening of something seemed to mitigate the effect. Yeah.
Like your mouth?
Yes.
Well, I'm just
trying. But if you don't, then you turn into a zombie cicada.
Stop it. I am just trying to bring some smart to the show. Come on. No, but literally, I read that story this weekend and I went, what? So that's what you feel. You're actually feeling it when that window is rolled down, and it's not your imagination. So when
it was darn unpleasant.
Yeah. So when
this is when you want that. What would it have been, Tom? Late 1950 or 1960 Mercury, where the rear window would roll down.
Whoa!
Oh, what was that called? Oh. Yeah, the Turnpike Cruiser.
Yes,
I don't remember what that feature was called. But yeah, you could roll down the rear glass. It was so cool.
Yeah,
yeah. There's one. We road tested one pickup truck that you could roll down the rear window, and I thought that was pretty
that
cool
was.
Too. Yeah,
Tom,
that was neat.
You should remember, what was that? It was, I want to say, about 10 years ago. I want to say it was a GMC with literally a rear, either roll down or open to the side window.
You slid it to the side, yes. And it did it flawlessly, and it just felt so good. And you didn't get buffeted by the wind either, because it was behind you. It was just really a cool feature.
Yeah, that could have been the early GMC, what was it called, Sierra C3, which was sort of a sporty luxury version of the Sierra. Back when pickups weren't quite as expensive as they are now.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember driving that down the drive and hoping that we wouldn't be ticketed for driving an SUV on the drive.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Well, Tom, we've kept you up way too late, but thank you as always for your time. And folks can find out about your podcast and all that other good stuff. Where do you want them to go?
Just go to consumerguide.com, or if you want to download the podcast, go to like Apple. And it's the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
Let us say, award-winning podcast.
Yes.
Yeah,
that you should avail yourself of, because it drops on Tuesdays live, and then you can access it throughout the week, right, Tom?
That is correct.
Okay, awesome. Nice talking to you. Have a great week, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye now.
We'll take a break. More coming up at WGN.
Oh, baby, it ain't no lie.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That lady's going to be joining us next week. That's Sue Foley. We've had Sue on the show before, but she's got a brand new album coming out, and she's going to be appearing at Space on April 17th. The new album is One Guitar Woman, and that's Sue playing that acoustic guitar, and it's an album that is a tribute to some of the pioneering women who sang the blues and played that kind of guitar, and she's so good.
Yeah, she is, and she's a great interview, too, so I look forward to catching up with her in the song. The show is, again, one of our favorite places. I know we said that earlier about the City Winery, but we also love Space in Evanston.
They're both great listening rooms.
Yes, because people go to hear the music, not to talk to each other.
And let me get you to mark your calendars, too, for a couple other things. Also next week, Patrick Crispin is going to be joining us, so we a whole bunch of computer stuff we need to get into. And we'll talk with Steve Burness.
We will.
From the Better Business Bureau. There's a lot of scams going on right now.
Oh, gosh. Well, Ron Brown had one earlier tonight from Tollway. People are getting notices and saying, you need to pay this toll. And if you've ever driven on the toll roads, you might think it's legit. And you click on a link that is fraudulent. He says that that has been taken down, but who knows if something else has popped up in the interim. So be careful. Don't do that.
So next week will be our last show from Chicago for a while.
Yeah.
Then starting April 20th through May 11th, we're going to take you on the road with us. We're going to be down in Panama City Beach, Florida. And we've got a month worth of shows that we'll be doing down there. And also, if you would, write down stevenandjohnnie.wordpress.com, stevenjohnnie.wordpress.com. That's our blog. That's where you will find, when it is available, the link to this week's podcast. But also, a little later today, something that that we think is kind of special will be on that blog. It's pictures from our wedding reception. We are observing 40 years
woohoo!
As of today.
Yep.
We were married 40 years ago. And we've got a bunch of pictures that have never been seen. Some with some Chicago celebrities who were at our wedding reception, Clark Weber, Dave Baum, Neil Saban, who now runs MeTV, and Richard Crowe, Chicago's ghost hunter. So we'll be posting that a little later. That'll be up on our blog. So go to stevenjohnnie.wordpress.com a little later today.
We'll take a quick break and come right back on WGN.
Take these sunken eyes and learn to see.
Learn to see
all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the light of a dark black.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That's Beyoncé and the Beatles' Blackbird from Beyoncé's new album.
My first reaction when I heard that from the album last week, and the week before, Jolene was getting a lot of play, and then this past week it was Blackbird. I thought, and then after the second listen, I realized I really love it.
Yeah.
I love her take on it.
Yeah.
And then I was real happy to hear that Paul McCartney, who wrote the song, said he was tickled. He just thought it was a beautiful rendition of the song. And I guess he gets co-producing credit because she uses his guitar and foot tapping from the original song that she's singing over.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
On so many levels.
Yeah. So he says that she did just a great version of the song, and her singing the song reinforces the civil rights message that inspired me to write the song in the first place. And McCartney does not mention in his Twitter posts about the song, but there's a great picture of the two of them together that she did use the master recording of the original guitar and foot tapping. And that was from 1968, from the White Album in 1968. So that means he gets the co-producing credit on her new recording.
I was just thinking about that White Album. That the Beatles White Album was one of the few albums that I remember specifically when I got it, and I took it home and I listened to it over and over and mm-hmm. over and over and over again. It was just...
I'll be honest with you. I was of an age when I first heard it. I really didn't understand a lot that was going on because mm-hmm. there was so much being said about it. I thought, what am I missing? Because I thought Blackbird was a sweet little song. And mm-hmm. I was probably much older before I realized that there was a heavier message to the song than this little toe-tapping tune about, mm-hmm. I thought, Blackbirds. No, it had a much more important, mm-hmm. poignant message from Paul McCartney when he wrote the song. But you're right. It was, some people consider it one of the best albums ever of Beatles albums. But then again, you can debate all night long which is the best of their albums and, you know, which.
I think one of the reasons I was impressed with it is they were doing so much. Well, obviously, it was a double album. But there were so many different styles that mm-hmm. the Beatles were experimenting with at that point. And I love the fact that Beyoncé is getting that kind of attention right now on country radio,
mm-hmm.
but also just bringing a lot of new people to Beyoncé and discovering her creativity. So good for her.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to find the story. Frankly, I was really surprised when I read the story the other day about what inspired her to do this album, and I hesitate to call it country because even though there's a Jolene and she's riding a horse and it's called Cowboy Carter, it's not really country, but that's okay. And plus, she's from Texas, as I said last week. If anybody has a right to sing about country music, then let Beyonce do it. I honestly read that during COVID, she was playing a video game with Miley Cyrus and two other stars, and their names escape me right now. And one of them mentioned that the game that they were playing was going to be coming out in a version that was set in Texas. And she said that inspired her, her love of this video game that she was playing with Miley Cyrus and these other two people, that you would know them if I could remember their names. And I thought, that is the strangest story. Beyonce sitting around playing a video game during COVID with Miley Cyrus.
But again, why not?
Yeah. I'll have to find the whole story because at first I read it and I went, oh, come on. I just had a hard time wrapping my mind around that group of people just hanging out playing a video game. And then she decided this life-changing, life-altering new album, and it is life-altering because suddenly people are taking notice of her that never really paid her any mention.
And I always am drawn to artists who, in the midst of a very successful career, decide, I'm not just going to recycle everything I've done. This is me today. Here's where I want to go. Yes, I'm going to, in my concerts, perform the songs that brought me to the table, mm-hmm. but I'm also going to take you on some new adventures. And I, to me, the I love artists who don't stop being creative.
Oh, yeah. And I hesitate to mention Taylor Swift, but again, she's proven that, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have to be in one lane. Dolly Parton is another one. You know, she received all of her attention last year for going rock.
And what's interesting about the conversation we're having right now, we're talking about three of the performers who have made some of the major headlines mm-hmm. in the music business over the past year, and they're all female.
Yeah.
Going back to the days we've talked about before, when I first got into radio in 1966, you can't play more than one female vocal in an hour.
And
the audience can't handle it.
In 1977, I was told we could not play them back to back.
Mm-hmm.
you could not play as popular as Barbara Streisand was and Captain and Tennille and
Olivia Newton-John.
You could not play them back to back because people would flip off their radios. They just couldn't tolerate that sound. Two women singing back to back. Well, anyway, I've done my part educating you folks tonight.
But speaking of talented women, I just saw something within the past week, and I was amazed it didn't get a little more publicity.
Hmm.
Martha Reeves, Martha and the Vandellas,
yeah,
just got her star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame within the past week.
Why would she get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
Why not?
She's famous. I know. I guess I kind of think of that as being movie people.
Yeah.
But I guess, yeah, they've kind of expanded that definition a long time ago. Yeah, you're right. I also found, remember we talked about this earlier today, the year that Julian was born, that April, the number of women that were on the charts 30 years ago, there was Mariah Carey and Janet Jackson and Celine Dion and Lisa Loeb, like the top 10 songs in April of 1994, six of them were by women.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, by the time we got to 1994, radio stations allowed more than one woman an hour, and certainly back-to-back female singers.
Oops.
I know. Already.
They're flashing the lights.
I know.
Where did the night go? Yeah, this was a five-hour show.
I know. And Grandpa
Bob. Where the heck did it?
He's got the Zamboni fired up. Hear it? He's coming down the hall.
Yep.
He's coming down the hall.
That means it's... Yep. We're getting ready for our last call. If you want to give us a call, 312-981-7200. That number again is 312-981-7200. If you would like to be our last caller, you don't have to have anything groundbreaking to say. Just be able to make a fist and say a word or two.
Hold the phone.
Yeah, hold the phone. And
if you haven't won anything in the past 60 days, we got some super duper prizes that we would be happy to give you if you are indeed our last caller at 312-981-7200. You can be the cherry on top of what has been a wonderful show.
Yeah, this has been a fun night.
Yes.
So in spite of the zombie...
Stop it.
312-981-7200, our last caller coming up.
It's that time again. We gotta say goodnight. You know it's getting late. Tomorrow is another day, my friend. All right, people. It's time to go home.
Yep.
Losing time. Head on out. So let's go. You don't have to go home.
Yeah, you really kind of do.
But you can't stay here.
No, you can't. And you can't hear the rest of the song.
Nope.
As it was pointed out on Facebook the other day when somebody had presented the, what are the lyrics to the Steve and Johnny theme song? the gentleman who chimed in along with Chuck Schnitzler and had the lyrics to our theme song that we opened the show with, the song by Bob Young. The gentleman said, but of course, if you want the closing theme, you need to go online, which I have done. And they're right. You'll never hear it on the radio.
Boy, you never
will. What, would we lie to you about that?
No.
Of course.
But if you want to go to our blog,
yes,
you will find it. Just do a search back in our blog. And our blog is steveandjohnny.wordpress.com, steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. And that also is where, in a day or two, you will see the link to our podcast. But later today, you will see a link to some pictures we're going to put up from our wedding reception. Today is
not just the
40th
reception.
Wedding anniversary.
I want to include some pictures from inside the church, too.
Yeah, some inside the church pictures, wedding reception, maybe a few things with some people you might have heard of, Clark Weber, Dave Baum.
Some sweet pictures, too.
Yeah.
And we were in Des Plaines. I always think that we were in Park Ridge, but it was Des Plaines that we were in.
It was Des Plaines at the First Congregational Little Church.
On Graceland.
On Graceland Avenue.
Yes.
In this place.
Gorgeous church.
Yeah, yes. It really was.
Okay, this is our last caller, and because it's our 40th anniversary, I'm going to go out on a limb and say number four. And number four's name is, we're told, is Jim.
Hi, Jim. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Chicago. And speaking about anniversaries, and I told your producer, the 40th anniversary of when Walt Disney opened in Anaheim, California, back in 1995, I answered your question, and I wanted one of your T-shirts.
Really?
Even the black T-shirt with the frog on it?
Yes!
Oh, yes, our Life After Dark T-shirt.
T-shirt, yeah.
Yes.
I still have it. I've only worn it once. It's like enshrined.
Oh, that's sweet, because you could sell that on eBay for $50.
Hey, and do you remember what the frog's name was?
Oh, gosh, I don't.
The frog's name was Moon Pie.
Yep.
That was the official food of the all-night show, which is appropriate for an eclipse that we should have Moon Pie mentioned, right?
So it was Moon Pie the Frog, and then there was the crown.
Well, I'm curious, because I now know your last name. You don't have to say it on the radio. Are you the same guy that texted a business card earlier tonight?
Yes, I did. I'm the automotive historian.
How about that? Because I took a picture of your business card. We have to get you on the radio sometime to talk about automotive history. Who do you write for, Jim?
You know what? I do some stuff on Facebook. I've done some stuff on some of the anti car magazines and newspapers and stuff like that. But I know Tom Appel, and I got like 8,000 car brochures sitting in front of me.
Oh, golly.
You're my kind of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, getting back there. That window that going up and down that was in the 63 through 68 Mercury. It was called the Breezeway, and it was available on the Park Lane, the Montclair, and the Monterey.
Yes.
Now, in the 90s, they had the Honda DeSalle, which also had the window that went up and down in the back.
Oh. And a listener says that a 78 Bronco had a rear window that would roll down. A 78 Bronco.
Yeah, they... That was like a station wagon rear window.
Oh,
okay. Would you?
Lincoln's had it back in the late 50s, too.
Right.
On their Continentals.
What was I thinking of? Because I'm almost positive that Johnny and I road tested a car within the past 20 years. And I think it was a sport utility. I want to say it was a GMC. I could be wrong. And it also had a rear window that I don't think you could roll it down, you would push it to the side.
You'd slide it, yeah. Well, I thought it was a pickup truck, Steve. I thought it was a fancy schmancy pickup
truck.
That's
why I said GMC. I thought it was like a GMC pickup.
Yeah, not an SUV. Because I clearly, as you say, recall driving down Lakeshore Drive and thinking, this is the coolest thing ever. Mm-hmm. Why don't all cars give you this option?
Right.
So what kind of, do you have any old cars that you drive now? Or?
I have a 1970 Chrysler 300 convertible.
Oh,
hello.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a boat.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
I bought that car in 78.
Did you?
Oh, boy.
Well, you know, you've probably heard us talk about our 82 Bonneville.
92.
I've always called it
SSE.
Yes,
SSEI.
Yes.
With a supercharged engine.
That we had 66,000 miles on that vehicle, and it's no longer in our garage after all those years of being garage kept.
You also had a 66 Bonneville convertible at one time,
did, and that's the car that I would still have today, except, long story short, I was working in Indianapolis, came up to Chicago to see my brother Lee, parked out in front of his house, woke up the next morning to find that somebody had smashed into the car, some drunk driver had smashed into the car behind me, smashed it into me, and smashed me into the car in front of me. So where my long Bonneville had been, there was this accordion that I had to get rid of. But it was a wonderful car.
Yeah, that was a boat, too.
Oh, boy.
Absolutely. Well,
yes,
I've kept your information, because we just may give you a little ring-a-ding sometime and say, let's talk about some car trivia, have some fun with that. Okay, Jim? And in the meantime,
I'll answer questions. I don't know it all, but
that's, you know what? If a guest tells us they know it all, we don't want them on the show because that's not human.
Exactly.
That's not possible. And to go along with your Life After Dark t-shirt, we are going to send you a retro WGN t-shirt, an official one, and you're going to get your very own American Weathermakers desktop weather station. The highly collectible desktop weather station. Oh. Yeah, pleasure talking to you, Jim. Thank you.
I'm going to need a bigger size than the one I got in 95.
Okay, we can accommodate you. Full figure. Hang on for a second.
Hold on, we'll get some personal information from you off the air. This has been a fast.
It has been.
5 hours.
And thank you so much to the 630 and the 708 and the 847 and the 815. All these folks that are texting in with anniversary greetings. Really appreciate that. Thanks a lot, because many of you have been with us for most of our married life. You came with us from the other radio station where we met and where we became the big promotional event when they married us off. That station is no longer around as it was then.
Right.
But we are still 40 years later.
And we should mention that coming up next week, we've got Sue Foley will be joining us. We'll also have Patrick Crispin joining us. And
Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau will have some tips for us, too. And we'll get an update on that AT&T nonsense that has been plaguing us for the past few weeks.
Yeah. And again, a reminder, check out our blog, steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. And a little later today, we'll be posting some pictures from our wedding and our wedding reception. And also, don't forget, in 2 weeks from now, we're going to be taking you on a month-long trip down to Florida.
A fact-finding trip.
Yes.
Right?
Strictly a fact-finding adventure. But, our thanks to Julian. Happy birthday, Julian.
Happy birthday, Julian.
And our thanks to Keeper of the Big Plug, Bob, and to Ron and Sylvia over in the newsroom. And thanks to you for hanging out with us.